All right, good morning, everybody. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, April 10th, 2018, and would ask if everybody would please join us as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you again, and good morning. So people are promising me that spring is actually going to get here. Hopefully later today we'll get to feel that. Couple items. One, I have to leave for another appointment this morning at 11:50. And so, Marty, I'll do that and then just leave the rest of the meeting in you guys' capable hands. And then two items, please remove from consent item 19, and item 4 from additional items. Those are both dealing with economic impact studies for conservation. Mike Cox is under the weather today, and since I'm not going to be here, just felt like we'd hold those for next week where we can have a full conversation about them. With that, we have public comment number 1. So this is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on anything you'd like to comment on before we start our meeting. Anybody wishing to do so, come right up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to the next item, which is consideration of proclamation of Crime Victims' Rights Week. County Attorney Jessica Reynolds. Good morning, Jessica. And Chief Sykosh.
Good morning, everyone. Well, I'm so proud to be joined today by Chief Sykosh, the Chief of the Ames Police Department. For those of you that haven't worked with the Ames Police Department, they are one of the best law enforcement agencies in the state, in my opinion. So I'm so proud to have them with us here today as we proclaim Crime Victims' Rights Week.
Slide this over and introduce the proclamation. Crime Victim Rights Week Proclamation 2018. Whereas Americans are the victims of 20 million crimes each year affecting individuals and communities, whereas years of investment in crime victims' rights and services have developed a system of victim response that can help victims recover from crime, whereas reaching and serving all victims of crime is essential to supporting thriving communities because those who receive holistic services and support are more likely to remain invested in their communities, whereas dedicated victim service providers are working every day to meet the needs of crime victims, yet there are still too many victims without meaningful access to rights and services.
Whereas many victims face barriers such as isolation, distrust of authorities, language limitations, lack of transportation, or cultural barriers that keep them from accessing the services and criminal justice system that can help them recover from crime. Whereas we must make a dedicated effort to expand the circle of those prepared to respond to victims and link them to resources that can help them recover. Whereas engaging a broader array of healthcare providers, community leaders, faith organizations, educators, and businesses can provide new links between victims and services that improve their safety, healing, and access to justice. Whereas National Crime Victims' Rights Week provides an opportunity to recommit to ensuring that all victims of crime, especially those who are challenging to reach or serve, are afforded their rights and receive a trauma-informed response, and
whereas Story County, Iowa is hereby dedicated to strengthening victims and survivors in the aftermath of crime, building resilience in our communities and our victim responders, and working for justice for all victims and survivors. Now, therefore, we, the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim the week of April 8th through 14th, 2018, as Crime Victims' Rights Week and reaffirm this county's commitment to creating a victim service and criminal justice response that assists all victims of crime during Crime Victims' Rights Week and throughout the year, and to express our sincere gratitude and appreciation for those community members, victim service providers, and criminal justice professionals who are committed to improving our response to all victims of crime so that they may find relevant assistance, support, justice, and peace. Could I have a motion making this Crime Victims' Rights Week?
I move adoption of the proclamation of Crime Victims Rights Week as presented.
I second.
Motion and a second. Let me just express to both of you guys sincere gratitude and thanks, not only for you, but for those who work for you and with you. There's others. You know, Sheriff Fitzgerald could be sitting there very easy. There's so many others in Story County. It's one of the things that makes this such a special place. Thank you for being here today to represent all of those.
Thank you.
Comments?
None. Thank you.
I actually have one. I was at a meeting yesterday where there was the supervisor of supervisors for our region of DHS, and she specifically said, praised how well the county attorney's office and our law enforcement officials work to cooperate, to see that sometimes they are helping the victims, you know, for a dependent child or a dependent adult, and was just so thrilled that there was that type of cooperation in Story County. She doesn't see that in every county. So thank you.
Thank you.
Story County is a special place. Nothing further. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is Crime Victims Right Week in Story County. Thank you very much. Next item, right along with this, is presentation of the third annual Crime Victims Rights Award. County Attorney Reynolds brought this award to Story County several years ago, and we're so excited that you're presenting again today.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited to be presenting the third annual Crime Victims Rights Award, and our recipient this year is so deserving. Her name is Detective Susie Owens from the Ames Police Department. And she is the first law enforcement professional to ever receive our award. She began at Ames PD 18 years ago, and her investigations are some of the absolute best investigations that I've ever seen in 14 years as a career prosecutor. They involve the very hardest subject matters. They involve child sexual abuse cases, homicide cases, and sexual assault cases. I know Detective Owens to be someone who pushes forward and fights hard for the truth. In her cases, the truth is often very difficult. Finding the truth requires her to do very hard things, like view video and photos of the sexual abuse of children, to talk in person with child victims and their families, to confront perpetrators in a controlled and professional setting, and to view physical injuries to children and adults, which requires her to spend hours away from her own family while she conducts interviews, prepares search warrants, and testifies at depositions and trials. In the end, we all find justice for crime victims because of people like Detective Susie Owens, people that don't turn away from hard truths but pursue those truths. They don't disregard crime victims, but they believe them. They believe them when no one else does. People like Detective Susie Owens are the reason that crime victims come forward, because she protects them, she believes them, and thus she protects our community at large. And I'd like her supervisor, Chief Sykosh, to say something before we present the award.
When I think about Detective Owens, a couple of things come to mind. One of the things I think you all need to know is the challenge of 18 years in this business. Jessica alluded to it, but these are difficult cases. They challenge your values. They challenge your view of the world. They challenge how we see our community. And it's hard to do those investigations without letting them change you. Susie and her family and her coworkers have survived, flourished, and maintained her compassion, integrity, and commitment in spite of the challenges of that work. And there's much to be admired, but we also owe her a great deal of gratitude. When I think about Susie Owens and what I'd like to say about her, I think the highest praise And the thought that sums it up for me is, if I had a family member who was a victim of violent crime, Susie Owens is the person I'd like to have investigate that. So well deserved. We're very proud that she works for our community, and very honored to be a part of this recognition for her today. Thank you.
Wow. Okay, so the award Story County Crime Victims Rights Award 2018, presented to Susie Owens for her excellence working with victims of violent crime. Outstanding. We have a few words for us.
And then we'll do a photo.
Okay.
All right, we need Ames Police and County Attorney's Office up for this. So we're going to wait just a minute. Nice try.
Come on, County Attorney's Office and Ames PD, please.
I like how they all
it never takes Wayne long to think over it. Chrissy, you got what you need? Everybody good?
Oh, we figured out that. Where are you from? I'll take your hand, Lisa. Congratulations.
Thank
I'm sure
you.
She's a formidable person to marry.
Hey, Chuck, would you push that door closer? Would you push that door closer for me? Thank you. All right, that was outstanding. Next, we have update and discussion. Notice no consideration, but update and discussion at this point of the Story County Medical Center's request for Story County funding. And I'm going to ask first for Ethan and Deb and Lisa Markley, if she's in the room, to come up. Is Ethan? So the way we got here is multiple conversations with Story Medical over at least months, but we may be talking about last summer. I mean, it's been months since we've had the conversation. Story Medical has done a lot of great work. I'm actually going to be in your facility here in a couple hours, and so value their role in our community. But in that conversation, we talked about the possibility of the county coming forward with some funding to assist paying off some of that work. And I thought it was a relatively straightforward request, and we could deal with it. And what I found, and what we found, like so many things that we deal with, is it wasn't real straightforward. It wasn't real, real simple. So we ended up handing it to this group to take a look at what our possibilities were, what mechanisms we could use. And for every answer you got, it seemed like we got a couple more questions bubbling to the surface. And so now today you're here to report out to us what you found and where we are.
That's right. Thank you. Ethan Anderson for the County Attorney's Office. Looking at the funding mechanisms here, like you said, we left no stone unturned, and some stone will be overturned. We've got more issues to discuss and talk about. But the question, may the county contribute to Story County Medical Center? The answer is yes. The county may contribute to that. The other funding mechanism that is available to Story County Medical Center is they may institute their own levy to pay for these repairs. We did discover that they cannot bond under the Central County Purpose Bond. Since they submitted to the county that they are a hospital under 347, they're limited to the general obligation purpose, general obligation bond under Iowa Code 331-442. And so the limits on that are $300,000 that the county could contribute. So if the county wanted to do so, they could contribute up to $300,000. And then there'd be, the county could do it as an election, or in lieu of an election, they could institute proceedings under 331, and the public would have a right and a notice to ask for election. So that's what's available. The county may fund up to $300,000 on their general obligation bond, or Story County Medical Center may levy on their own debt service. And that's the options.
Okay. Deb, Lisa, anything to add?
$300,000, just for sake of conversation, is about 5.5% of our unassigned ending fund balance.
Okay.
As we sit right now, and I'll be coming to you shortly with a budget amendment to talk about where we're at with ending fund balances, but we're in the 27% range.
Okay, and then you mentioned something that I was not aware of until you guys started looking at this, and so I just asked you to elaborate. So as a levying entity, Story Medical has a mechanism that they could levy for debt, but it's not being utilized, and really not being utilized by the industry right now. Is that what you found?
That's fair to say. Lisa and Deb reached out from the contacts they had with the Iowa Department of Management and different people at Story County Medical Center, and there's an acknowledgement that option exists to levy on the debt service. The answer they seem to be getting from different entities is that none of the 42 hospitals throughout the state currently levy on it. Not that they can't levy on it, that they just aren't currently levying on it.
42 county hospitals.
Yeah, they throughout the state, you know.
Okay.
Are any of them in the same situation as Story County Medical with a, this is, to me, I think this must be a unique situation. They borrowed money with committing to raise $2 million against a $15 million loan, correct? You've not been able to raise your $2 million. How many of those other county hospitals are in that particular situation where they have a legal obligation to come up with one-third of what they committed, and they're not letting?
That's a good question, and we didn't, we could go back to them and dig into that, but we didn't ask that specific question.
I feel it's pretty important because we had one taxing entity asking another taxing entity to, in essence, cover their obligation. I just want to say that when we last discussed this, it did not impress upon me that we were being asked for the entire $700,000. I was left with the impression that you had $700,000 to raise, and were we interested in helping contribute. Now, that's my own personal opinion. I've had no contact from anybody from the Story County Medical Center or their board.
Yeah, well,
in the meantime. So
yeah.
Now I'm sitting here thinking the whole $700,000. I'm a little bit shocked.
Well, no, so please don't be shocked. I think, as I recall the request, and we can have Nate come up and talk to us about it, it's simply a request for some kind of help getting where they need to go. And I think what has been expressed is it'd be great if they could have the whole sentiment under. I mean, that gets you there, but really any portion thereof, when we charged this group to look into it, it was simply, what are we allowed to do, and what's going on around the state, how has this been done, if it's been done anywhere else, and ultimately whatever decision is made comes back to us. For me, the new piece of information, Loris, is as a levying entity that has levying capacity, so for us, and let's call it $300,000, because anything beyond $300,000 gets really problematic in that it triggers an election. And I'm not saying that doing $300,000 is easy, but anything beyond that triggers an election. But for us to generate $300,000 out of our general fund, I mean, it's roughly 6 cents onto our countywide levy. So, in essence, that money's already coming from the people of Story County when possibly Story Medical has their own capacity to go get that money from the same people. And so that would be not legally what we've got to talk about, but that would be one of the consideration when this item gets to us as consideration. Ultimately, that would be one of the items we have to consider. What today is intended to do is just report out what we found and see if there are other questions. So, Laura, you were mentioning you got questions. Mm-hmm. One of those questions would be just to clarify, is it the full 700 or was it up to 700, which is what I understand.
And I don't know whether this committee addressed this or someone from Story County Medical could address it, but what was the original time frame? For me, I think we need a lot of answers. And one would be, what was the original time frame in which you had to raise this $2 million? When is the actual deadline where I don't even know what will happen to you? Isn't it a USDA loan? Okay, yeah. When the USDA comes back and says, sorry, you didn't live up to your part of the bargain. And then also I'd be interested in just finding out what kind of avenues were taken to try to raise it, because you must have had that expectation that sometime you could raise $2 million. Mm-hmm. So those are the types of
things. Hey, you want to come on up? Marty, while Nate's coming up, any thoughts that you have based on what we
heard? It was back in November that it was just Laura Snyder that day listening to the presentation, and I look forward to hearing the number. When in November it was $700,000, and they said they were still going to be working on a capital campaign basis to defray that, and so I suspect maybe $700,000 is an old number. But on the follow-up, I went promptly to Lisa Markley and said, okay, do they have the levying capacity to do debt? And then asked, yes, they do. They had that line item there. Do they use it? No. Then she said, well, that's unusual. And then she went and looked at the county hospitals in the state of Iowa. Nobody uses it. So I guess there's some learning here to be done today that I think everybody just would like to hear what the industry is doing when you have that ability. So good morning, Nate.
Hi. Good morning.
Thanks for the chance to be here. I'm joined by Linus Freinitz, who's our Chief Development Officer, who leads our fundraising campaign. Patrick Sheets is here as a trustee and engaged community member. If I may just get to your questions, Loris. You asked what happens if we don't get to the $2 million. At this point, there's no penalty or consequence per se, but we would have to find the rest of those dollars out of our operations and out of our annual performance, and so it would hinder other things that we have on the radar, have had in plans, would slow us down, so to speak. And so no penalty per se, but we would have to find it from somewhere if we don't get to that.
And you say on the radar. Mm-hmm. So operating expenses, to me, I think about what it's taking to keep the doors open. Okay, when you say on the radar, I think about future planning. Mm-hmm. So you're coming once again to us, a taxing entity, when you're a taxing entity yourself, and asking us to take on the burden for almost the same people that you would reach out to instead. So that I just want to make sure, if I've got this wrong in my head, you correct me, so that you guys can keep on your strategic plan.
More or less, that's correct.
So, Nate, I'm just curious, has your trustees talked at all about utilizing the debt service? And what would, other than it's not typically done in the industry, would there be some kind of penalty to you? That would be a question I'd like to have an answer to, since, as Loris points out, we are talking about the money ultimately coming from the same place, whether it flows through Story County or just goes on your levy. The other thing, as I understand it, if it's debt service levy, and I'm going to look at it, you guys might not be able to answer this, but if it's debt service levy, it doesn't trigger an election. It is simply, if you've got the debt and can verify the debt, you can put it on your debt service levy as well.
Yeah, the conversation.
Get close enough to the microphone that we can hear you, Lisa.
Here. I
talk about the response I got from Department of Management, which wasn't very helpful, when I asked this question, was we don't really see county hospitals levying debt service very often. None currently are. I assume they are working with bond counsel. If so, the ability to levy debt service for any bond is determined by how the debt issuance is structured by legal counsel.
Yep.
So the answer to your question is yes, the ability to levy for debt service is
depending on how this loan is structured. And so that would just be
that. And I couldn't find any limitations. I couldn't find any. That was what my initial question was. You know, the county has certain limitations as to how much and where we need to levy and things like that. But there is no, the code does not talk about that from what we could find.
Okay.
For a hospital, for a public hospital.
And so I took indication from you, Nate, that that's not something your trustees have discussed yet.
That's correct. Not that specific portion of our debt levy we've not considered utilizing.
Okay.
I think to your point, Laura, it was up to $700,000. We never asked for the full $700,000. And to date, we are at 1.4 in pledges. So we've come up $100,000 since October when we were last here. And we do have a couple of big asks still in the works. Where those will end up, we don't know yet.
And to your other question about the efforts underway, like I said, Lonnie leads our foundation and fundraising efforts. She's been in the community for 20-plus years and has really been cultivating a lot of those local relationships to try to drum up that support. She's doing a fabulous job. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Super. So then the question becomes, this is not a consideration item, but what we can offer some direction of where we go from here. It sounds like we've got a few more questions, Nate, that I would ask you to take back to your board and just see what kind of answers you can provide us. I think now that we've gotten to this part, Ethan, we're freed up to consider this at any point, right? We had trouble considering this over the last number of months because we didn't have the answers. We needed to know what we could consider, what was appropriate. Now if you can answer those other questions for us, I think we're ready to get this as a consideration item. I know for me it's going to be important that your board at least talk through what and why you would or would not utilize a levy capacity that's there for you, since ultimately what we're talking about, however we do it, it is coming from generally the same place.
I would ask when you do put that on your agenda that you make notice to us so that we might be inclined to listen to what discussion is at your table.
At our board meeting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Super. Other things for us, Nate. Thanks so much for coming over today. And like I said, we put this on here not as a consideration item, just for a chance for us to talk it through. Hopefully we're coming out with a little more clarity. I know you and I have been bouncing emails back and forth trying to figure out how to get to the end of this.
Right. Did you have an opportunity to, Ethan, did you share your opinion with them?
I didn't. If you'd like me to, I can forward it to me.
I have no. I would think that just we're operating from this is what Lisa and Ethan did on our behalf for our information to have this conversation. I think it would be something I would be comfortable in sharing to them, showing what we found out in our.
Yeah, Ethan, I'll handle getting it over to him, and that way you have it for your board.
Excellent.
Okay. Anything else? Any other questions, Boris? Is there anything else that you're going to want them to know before this comes before us as any kind of consideration?
No, I think, you know, from my questions about where I probably have very great concerns of, and I like what Marty had asked, that we know when the board meeting is if we want to go listen or send one of the team to go listen to that, because I want to hear that answer about why you wouldn't use your levy cash.
You bet.
Thank you.
Super. Thank you all.
Thank you. Next is update and discussion, again, no consideration, but update and discussion on request for Story County funding for the Healthy Life Center. Deb and Nancy, you might as well go ahead and come up, because and Warren, perfect. Warren Madden is going to join Deb. So, Deb, you can, I guess I'll tee this one up as well. So, for more than a year, for 2 years, we've been talking about the Healthy Life Center. Deb Childroth has actually been part of the group that is meeting regularly on the Healthy Life Center. The three of us most recently attended a full community update on the Healthy Life Center. Since that update, Warren and Bev Madden and Ann Campbell have been tapped to help lead the fundraising efforts. I see that it is on the Ames City Council agenda tonight to talk about the Healthy Life Center, so it's pretty apropos that we're talking about it today. Deb, go ahead and fill in the gaps that I left out for how we got here this morning.
All right. So the last time that a meeting was held with the governing bodies for discussion on the Healthy Life Center was back in February, and that was when the consultants
who have been doing the study on the likelihood of this being a concept for City of Ames and Story County. They released their findings. They were available to answer questions that individuals had, and talk a little bit about what the capital campaign might look like, and then what the ongoing funding and operational costs may look like for a facility of this caliber. And I know that from the county's perspective, we were interested in knowing what kind of utilization would be projected in terms of residents outside of the City of Ames. And at the board meeting that we initially discussed this in November, it was discussed that about 57% would be Ames residents, 30% Greater Story County, and then 13% of others, so individuals that might be coming to the area to work and then maybe stop off at the Healthy Life Center to work out or just visit it. And I know that those numbers were just a little bit different in the feasibility study, and there were some questions about why that was, and the consultants responded to that. But as a result of that meeting with the consultants, the process is continues to move on, and we've got now the capital campaign co-chairs in place. They have their strategies in mind in terms of how to march forward with getting dollars. And so we thought now was a good time to get that update and to hear about where things are at with that part of the process and where the county might fit into that going forward. And Warren has a handout that I will provide to you.
Hi, Warren.
Good. While she's passing out, good morning. I appreciate you taking a few minutes this morning to let us present kind of a status report of where we are. As has been indicated, I'm Warren Madden. My wife Beverly's here in the audience. Ann Campbell is sitting someplace back there. There's Ann and Nancy Carroll. We've been kind of the leadership team that has been working on pulling this together. As your earlier presentations, I think, have outlined, this is a project that we think is very much needed in Story County. It is somewhat unique around the country to combine the six entities that at least have been part of the conversations to develop a healthy life center. I think as you look at community needs, and certainly as I was retiring about a year and a half ago as Senior Vice President of Iowa State, overseeing much of the university's personnel actions, hiring and bringing people into our community and providing the array of services that they need has become an increasingly challenging problem. I think for the first time there are a lot of multi-generational needs. The Healthy Life Center is a project that will attempt to address those. If we can improve people's lifestyles, both in the early ages of their lives and as they mature and get older, it can have an impact not only on their quality of life, but also, I think, on our costs as we try and address issues, whether it's overweight and diabetes in younger age generations, or as people mature and get older, the needs that Heartland Senior Services are providing. I've been around a lot of circumstances where people today with aging parents or significant others or spouses, some of these services right now are not adequately available in Story County, and this facility will bring them all together. One of the components now that looks like it will be needed is a warm water swimming facility. As I'm sure you know, with the City of Ames School, or the Ames Public Schools, moving ahead with their new high school project, the existing municipal pool in Ames will be removed. It's reached the end of its useful life. They're building a competitive swimming facility, but it is not a warm water facility that can be used either for teaching young people zero entry kinds of access, and then as older people who want to use it for physical therapy and exercise. So we've got these six entities that have come together. We've got a tentative site selected. We've had general indications from all the people we've been visiting with that this project is greatly needed. It's a $48.7 million project if all of the components are done. It's a mix of funding from a number of entities. The private philanthropic fundraising piece is about $18.2 million. and we're in the process of organizing a campaign cabinet handout. I think that's been given you sort of outlines the structure we're hoping to follow. We've identified some leadership individuals. We have a number of others that are indicating a willingness to help. Our goal is to be able to report back to the various governmental entities by the end of the summer, early fall, kind of the status of all of this. As you all know, this is certainly an ambitious goal, raising $18.2 million. We're very optimistic that we can get this done. We have a number of people have indicated that they are supportive of this. As you know, with projects today, naming opportunities, all the things that you can do are part of what we're visiting about. This facility will fill a real need and complement a number of other programs in the community. I think she's answered the question sort of about what our projected usage is based upon. It is intended to be a countywide facility. We're open individuals every place in the county from all socioeconomic backgrounds will be able to utilize this facility, and we want to develop user structures that permit that to happen. In some of the other materials, I think you've probably seen there are at least schedules and proposals about how that would work. So we're in the, I guess we're no longer in the quiet phase of the campaign. We're being pretty public about what we're about, and we're being optimistic that we'll be able to pull this together and get the commitments. It is complicated because of the number of entities, but that makes it all the more challenging and desirable. If we can put all these groups together to develop all the facilities that are in this proposal, I've estimated this probably will save $10 to $20 million over each of these groups going off and doing something on their own, whether it's multiple sites or multiple parking facilities or the kind of services you can bind by putting all of these in one facility, in addition to making it a lot more convenient and hopefully helpful for the users. This will cover their age range from young children all the way up through senior citizens, and we think it's a real opportunity. We're optimistic that we'll be able to accomplish the fundraising goal. We know that all of the governmental entities have to take some kind of formal action at some point. And, you know, you're in the sort of cycle about what gets done first. Our goal is to come back and indicate we believe we can meet the private fundraising component. And then we hope all of you that are in the governmental public sector units will then consider this seriously. And hopefully we'll continue to provide the support. As the handout indicates, at least in the early planning that people have done and it involved some of the other administrators, we're hoping Story County would consider a $3 million capital contribution and then also assist with some of the annual operating costs. And as part of that, then all of the users would be able to utilize this under the same user fee structure. We do intend to have individuals that are not residents of the county, and there are some of those, pay a higher fee to use the facility since they aren't contributing as residents of Story County. But that's the framework of where we are. We think we've got a good leadership team. We've got a number of people that indicated a real interest in this, and we hope we can come back to you late this summer with a progress report of where we are. I'd be pleased to answer questions, or any of my colleagues, I'm sure, would be.
Warren, thank you very much. Really thorough questions for Warren or Deb or Nancy or Ann or Beth.
Warren, how vested are you on the site you are proposing to do this on? I mean, do you have any alternates in that sense?
The original planning group looked at a number of alternate sites. Iowa State University has indicated a willingness to make this site available. It's on 13th Street. Well, 13th and Ontario, it's actually on the portion of that that's named Ontario, at Shoal Road. There's a 10-acre site there that Iowa State has. It has been farmland up till now. It's increasingly challenging for the university to farm that within the kind of urban environment that is. It's a good location. There are existing bus routes. SciRide goes by that site. 13th Street obviously connects with the interstate and the rest of the county. So we think that's a good site, and Iowa State's indicated it's available. Now, are there other sites that could be considered? Certainly we're open to that. But this site would accommodate all of the components of this facility and also provide some space if in the future there was a need to expand it. So we think it's a good site, but we're certainly open to more conversations.
Lisa, where, say, everything falls into place, we find the $3 million, where would the $200,000 a year maintenance fee likely come out of our budget from? Would you offer up a suggestion to the board at that time to take it from here or from there or where?
My initial response was the general fund.
Part of the general fund budget.
I can't see how it would be appropriate for it to come out of any other of our funds.
No, I can't either.
Just to address this issue with both Story County Medical and the Healthy Life Center on the agenda today, I came in on Saturday and dug out the budget book and took a look here, and I keep a running list of what I anticipate we're going to have in upcoming expenses, like I'm sure everybody does up here at someone. So just what we've got this year, I'm sure you've heard about the backfill, $240,000, less than our budget, less for 19. We're going to have about $100,000 probably shortage on insurance if we look at still keeping a 15% to 20% of increase on that. And we still then we're using from 19, we budgeted about $230,000 to start our self-insurance reserve, which we're now using to pay for the additional that we're picked up to keep the insurance in force for our people, for our employees. We have the COLA sewer studies then possibly soon to be followed by being able within a year, a couple of years, to lay out about $500,000 to hook up, hopefully hook Hickory Grove to the COLA solar system. If some bridge repairs don't work on 280th, we have a decision to make about $101.4 million to fix a bridge or close a bridge or whatever. We've got on our capital improvements plan the Justice Center study and planning, the planning, and then as you move ahead, the back still keeps on getting pulled to the $710,000. So we've got the E911 equipment coming up. So, and once again, self-insurance doesn't go away. We're going to run out of the reserve for the mental health for the region, and we're going to see an increase in the levy we're going to have to do for mental health if we're going to cover the full amount of what we can pull, and the region needs that as more services come up. So I just want to point out here that while asking about $200,000 may seem like, well, you know, for a yearly subsidy of this, when you start to run the list of what I think, at least is on my list already, of what's going forward, that $200,000 operating expense starts to really concern me. So with that was Marty's question. I wanted to run some of these. If you don't mind, I'd like to jump on there about saying, how firm is that $200,000? I think when we all went to the presentation, we heard that if we buy into this and operating costs are more, that those projections for those fee coverage don't meet. We're on the hook for our share of that increase above $200,000, right? I mean, our share of the $500,000, correct?
Well, I think that, one, this project, if it moves ahead, it has to be designed, constructed, and planned. So you're probably talking about a facility that at the earliest would come online in 3 years maybe. So the operating costs are not an immediate problem. Now, I fully understand the challenges you and the other governmental entities have and the difficulty on setting budgets. The entities will have to work out the appropriate operating agreements, and none of that has yet been done. And so in terms of the actual commitments and sort of those legal obligations among all these parties, that's yet to be worked out. And, you know, our charge is on the fundraising side to get that pulled together. It's my understanding that some of the administrators that are part of all of those entities will have to sit down, I suspect, with county attorneys and city attorneys and work through the appropriate agreements about how this all works. I'm optimistic that we can work this out within the framework. We believe these are good estimates. We're working with good consultants. I personally have been around these kinds of planning projects over a long period of time, and they are estimates, and so you're correct. There is a certain amount of, you know, judgment that goes into it. We're hoping these are optimistic. The data has been built around the use of things like the Furman Aquatic Center and others, and so we think we have reasonably good numbers. But, you know, it's a matter of setting priorities, and the challenge you all have as representing us in Story County is prioritizing and moving ahead. We're hoping you will give this particular project serious consideration. This is a good bargain for the county. If we can, in fact, raise $18-plus million privately and can put all these entities together to build this, the residents of Story County are getting a real bargain and a bang for the dollars that are going into this for this level of services that will continue to serve the county for the next, you know, 40 or 50 years. And so I think it's a real bargain to do all of this. And I think we can get it put together. But the legal agreements will have to be worked out by those entities for all of you.
Well, and so just to underscore the question Laura's asked, and Warren, you did a good job answering, is we're at the beginning of the beginning of this.
Right.
I mean, all the work has gone in to get us to this point where we get to actually start considering it in more than back-of-napkin conceptual form. There's a lot of work left to do, and I'm going to look at Nancy when I say this because I think I'm seeing this right. The request that's been made, not just of Story County, but of all the entities, is how you make this initial concept work. The thought that our initial concept is going to be exactly where we end up in any one of the components is probably not realistic that we're going to get there. But you got to start somewhere, and you got to start to try to piece that together. You think that's a fair statement?
Okay, and as Nancy comes up, I'd like to point out that I asked about scope and some of the structure planning at that meeting in January, and I was told we could have no input, there could be no changes that we might be interested in making at that time. I mean, I heard Brian Dieter and Steve Shanker say up there when I was asking one of my many questions that night, and so if we're not allowed to have any input on the scope, and we're not allowed to have any input on some of the features where they're placed, how then do I pull it to see the beginning?
I was at that meeting and I didn't come away with that at all. I mean, I didn't even come away with that close. I came away with, no, this is the concept that we're going forward with, but I never heard that we were at the end of taking any input or having any conversations or anything like that.
I specifically asked about why and expressed my displeasure with the fact that all-inclusive playground was behind, if you will, the paywall, okay, that you had to have a membership of some. And also I asked about the glass, the amount of glass used, and I asked about the size about this. Did it, in fact, need to include some of the items, such as the 120-person
right, and what
capacity?
I heard that you
and
were
I
told,
heard, no.
What, you know, what I heard that you were told, and I'm going to ask Nancy, since you were running the meeting, what I heard was, Boris, this is the concept that we're coming forward with, not that this is the end product that we're coming forward with, and we aren't going to sit here tonight and talk about things like the smoke on the glass or the where the glass wall is or where the playground is. We're trying to get to an initial concept. Nancy, did I hear that wrong that night?
Right, and so maybe we missed communicating because obviously we can all hear different things at any given time, so I think it's really important that we do clarify today that no, it is still the conceptual design phase. And if there's glass around the playground or not, to be determined. 100% yet to be determined. What we're talking about today, and I appreciate, again, that you raise the question because it's so important that we get the facts at this stage. We need to know when we look at this kind of a slide that we have been showing now for several months. That when Bev Warren and Ann and the team now that they're putting together, they have to go out with some level of confidence from a conceptual of the overall project, not again about the detail we're talking from a design internally, that they know when they go out they can talk about the support that generally they believe we have for this project from all of these participating, we hope, entities. So again, they need to know, I believe, that there's a willingness, that you think there's a potential to, again, contribute $3 million. That's where we're at now. You know, again, same with Murray Greeley Medical Center. We're looking at a slide that says roughly $7 million. they still have not made a decision any more than you have. We are still looking at, when the city of Ames is listed at $17 million on the slide, that that's going to include approximately, to get to that $17 million, somewhere in the realm of a $15 million bond issue the residents of Ames would have to pass. So we all have to bring our confidence level through these kind of conversations to bear, because otherwise I don't think it's fair for Warren, Bev, and Ann and the team they're putting together to go out and have conversation. And you can appreciate that we put on this that, again, formal approval is still required. We understand no one has made a decision, starting with the residents of Ames, in a bond issue, but they have to have some realm of confidence.
So thank you so much, Nancy. I want to circle back to something Warren said earlier, because it struck me, Warren, and I think it's so important that we note here. So this is pulling together a bunch of different entities, but more importantly than pulling together a bunch of different entities, it's pulling together a bunch of different components that Ames and or Story County and or Mary Greene Medical Center, a bunch, are going to be spending money on. The reality is, Nancy, the group that you run, Heartland Senior Services, that facility is past end of life. The facility that you're in now is past end of life. It's not serviceable. Somehow we're limping on. Whether the Healthy Life Center in this conceptual form happens or not, it's not going to change that we've got to have a home for Heartland Senior Services to provide, be able to provide the services. You mentioned a warm water pool. We mentioned all the services that right now in Ames and Story County we don't have the ability to provide. Now, that said, there's nothing that requires us to put them all under one roof, one really nice roof, but it's a great concept for us to look at. And we're still trying to figure out, and hopefully you guys would agree with this, we're still trying to figure out whether this is a feasible concept or not. But I haven't heard anybody say yet, oh, this concept, just in concept, even looking at it, is terrible. I hear people say it costs too much. I hear people say, what do you mean it's going to lose $700,000 a year, $500,000 plus the county? I hear those kind of things, but I haven't heard anybody say conceptually that we don't need to be digging in to figure this out. You think that's fair?
Yes, yeah, exactly right. We're looking for, you know, support of moving ahead, understanding that no one has taken formal action on this yet. But it's hard to go out and convince people to give money and be part of the private philanthropy support if we can't say we believe these governmental entities are going to give serious consideration to this.
That's right.
Now, I don't want to minimize the challenges you all have, and when you're talking about things that are going to be 2 or 3 years down the road, there's a great deal of uncertainty. I've been part of that for my professional career with Iowa State, which has got its own challenges.
It's what keeps us young, though, Warren.
That's right. But this is a real opportunity to do something for Story County, and we're hopeful that we can pull this together. Now, it's a plan, and if there are suggestions about things that could be done differently, should be modified, better, we're certainly open to that. You know, architects have presented what they think is a feasible working plan, but it's not perfect. In all the projects I built over 50 years at Iowa State, I don't think any of them ever ended up being quite what was presented to you on day one, usually for good reasons. And we certainly want to have lots of input from everybody. And if Story County has someone who wants to be more engaged in this process with us, I'm certainly more than willing to have that individual be part of conversations. We're trying to be inclusive. The more people that want to help us, the better this project will be and the more successful we will be.
Could we come back to the bond? You talked about the $15 million bond for the city of Ames. Okay. If we did a general obligation bond, the city of Ames people would pay twice. Yeah, I mean, I think that needs to be emphasized, is that there'll be one levy from the city for that, and there'll be another levy from us. We just can't cut. So if we go that way.
Right.
Okay.
I wouldn't say we're paying twice. What we're doing is saying the size of the amount of funding we need is based upon
bigger
number.
Our levy will increase from two different entities.
Sure.
Okay.
That's
so, Nancy, I have a question then about the $18.2 million that is the private group to raise, and then your entity is pledged or is hoping that you'll be able to kick in about $3.5 million, right?
Right.
Okay. So will you be competing with the same group that's out there raising for your money to kick into this? Are we really talking about raising almost $22 million from the community?
Great question. I'm really pleased to share that of our 3.5, we have 2.5 already committed. So we have a balance of $1 million, okay. And what we're doing, and you know, you always have to be careful when you're going out, and again, with the campaign team that's going after the $18 million, there's going to be a list that everyone knows who they're going and asking who for what. And I think when you go out and you look at a philanthropic initiative, you have to go and say what speaks to someone's heart and not double dip on the same person. So what Heartland is doing, we have a core group that has been over the decades very passionate about our adult day center in particular. So we're going to be looking to finalize our $1 million gap with people that have a passionate heart for the Adult Day Center, and I believe we will not be using or going after the same list that the other side will be.
Okay, thanks.
Marty, questions or comments?
I appreciate the flexibility, even at this point, on a conceptual basis, that while this is just a proposal, you still have the ability to move things, and I think that's what came across to me both at the January meeting at City Hall and the follow-up at Oakwood. And I think that you would be well-served to keep it in that realm for the time being. This is a conversation I would welcome back, and I wish you luck going forward. You giving us a very, very topical approach. I get that. The hardships, Laura's did a very good job of enumerating. We do have some substantial big money hits we're going to have to backfill here in a very short period of time, but I think that's everybody's story on this list. Nancy, I get it. I serve on the Boys and Girls Club, and we've maxed our facility out, too. You have done yours, and congratulations to both organizations. That sounds like success with good problems. Mm-hmm. On a going-forward basis, I think Rick hit it in the sense that I've heard the dollars question. I've heard the location question. I've heard a lot of things, but I watched rather closely when I sat there and saw the warm water, competitive water pool discussion was had in Ames. And I think, rightly, the Ames, both today and on a going forward basis, deserves both, and I hope somehow somebody gets that done.
Well, so it's going to get done. So so two quick thoughts, and then, Marcy, if you have one more to close us up, we'll do it. The two thoughts are this. I hope nobody mistakes that. So talking about story cap, right? So the request is $3 million plus $200,000 a year. Wherever ultimately that request or any consideration would end up, we'll see. But nobody should mistake that Story County ultimately is not going to have some skin in the game on the items that are proposed to be part of the Healthy Life Center. Even if the Healthy Life Center doesn't happen, there are components of the Healthy Life Center that are going to end up being part of our community, and Story County ultimately is going to have some skin in that. So it's not like this is a yes or no answer. It's either are you doing it this way, or are you doing it another way, or are you doing it another way, and what is Story County's role? The second one is Laura's did a great job giving us the gloom and doom of what might be ahead. Let's just be really, really clear. There has never been a time in Story County's history that we have been in a better fiscal position than we are today. And as far as the issues that we've got coming down the road, we've got the same issues that Story County has always had. It's different names, it's different bridges, it's different services, it's different unfunded mandates or pullbacks from the state. It's been different things. But for the last 150 years, Story County's been dealing with these same issues. The difference right now is Story County's in a position to address those issues and address them well. We're not going to have, Marty, my favorite thing, $150,000 leak above Lisa Markley's head for 3 years, like Story County honestly had one time. And so we're in a great position, Morris, to deal with some of those challenges that you note. And there's going to be many, many more that you don't know. Anybody who thinks sitting up here is come to work and everything goes exactly like you think it's going to go, they're kidding themselves. And all you can do is put yourself in a position to be able to look at concepts, to be flexible with how you're dealing with it, and to recognize that you don't have to have all the answers before you ask the next question. That it's part of a process, and figuring out what the playground looks like or whether there's glass into the pool. We'll get there. The general concept is, does Ames and Story County need these services, X, Y, Z, you know? And does it make sense to house them all together? And if it makes sense to house them all together, how would we fund that? And that's where we are today. We're not at a yes-no. We're at a, is this worth exploring? Is it worth seeing what kind of community support we can get? Is it worth getting to the end of figuring out what an actual ask of Story County would look like so that the Board of Supervisors can make a decision? And if that's the question, then I think it's an easy answer. I think we're making a mistake if we don't say, we want to work, we're not committed to any of this. Loris points out rightly, it would be problematic, as all of this would be. There's nothing easy, as Ethan and Lisa and Deb just dug in and saw with the request for Story County Medical Center. There's nothing easy about it, but it's not supposed to be easy. And we're supposed to dig in and look at everything, and that's where I come down on all of this. With that, Loris, if you have something else.
Sure, because I've heard the emphasis from Nancy and Warren with their both fundraising experience, successful fundraising, getting projects going. But you talked about it's easier to raise money when the public entities, when it's known that the public entities are in. And so part of my doom and gloom today, if you will, is to send out that message that this will be a tough decision. Okay, and that I know you on the fundraising side are trying to ask money for commitments now, and we are nowhere near a commitment, just even this entity, let alone the other entities. And so now I'm going to put that hat on of what I used to do, and I often saw where projects took on steam. And people started making assumptions, and by the time the entity actually took that formal vote, they were so far ahead that it was almost impossible for a government entity to pull back. So I want to make sure that we're moving in tandem rather than one entity getting out and it becoming such a large, there's an assumption out there that this board is going to support it and going to support it at some level that is functional for the people you're asking money to commit. I want to make sure that we know that there are breaks of caution out there and this doesn't become a ball collecting or a ball of twine collecting as it rolls downhill and gets bigger and bigger till there's a point where we can't stop it anymore if we would need to stop it. That's part of my doom and gloom. The other part of it is I remember when the discussion was almost 10 years ago, we need a warm water pool period, and Heartland was falling, the building that Heartland was in was falling apart 10 years ago, and those were the only two entities. And so from a scope standpoint, I do see this huge thing that now has become, and I carry that memory.
Yeah, but both of those things were accurate 10 years ago, and we didn't address them. And now look at the cost that we're dealing with by not addressing them 10 years ago. And so, Loris, I mean, so I agree with most of what you said. I think I just don't agree with the ultimate conclusion that I hear you drawing, and that is that we have to move in lockstep to get to the end of this. I don't buy that we have to move in lockstep. We've got a lot of moving parts here, and what we need to know is, and a school system is the perfect example of this, there will come a point for every entity where they're either going to have to be in or out. I'm not hearing that Story County is there yet. I'm hearing that Story County is, do you agree that we need to be exploring this? Do you agree that we need to be figuring out how we're going to provide these services? And if we can provide them with this healthy life center concept, and we're going to know that. We're going to know that through the private fundraising. We're going to know that by how the other entities move through. It doesn't have to be lockstep. And when Warren and Bev and Ann go see people about being part of this, they don't have to be able to say or even imply, oh my God, Story County is all in and they're in for $3,047,000 and they're going to fund this portion of it. They need to say, you know what, Story County's been really supportive in the concept and we're trying to see if we can get the concept done. And I'm not worried about us moving completely together every step of the way. And as far as this board not having the ability to say no at any point in time, I just think you're underestimating the three people that sit here, past, present, and future. We always have the ability to say no. And if you're sitting there thinking there's ever a point that you don't get to say no when you want to say no, then you're not sitting in the right chair. I mean, there are lots of hard decisions we have to make at hard times. And if this ends up being a hard decision, yes or no, it's going to be up to these three people to make it. Whenever it comes to us.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking time to visit. We're going to be optimistic, and we'll get this job done.
Well, I so appreciate it. In case I didn't say this, I'm so appreciative not only of all the work, Nancy, that you and the entire team, Brian Dieter and our own Deb Shildroff and so many others have put in, but now, Warren, for you and Bev and Ann to step up for the community to fully explore and vet this item just to see it. I mean, it is a big, big bite. But how are we going to know whether we can do it if we don't at least try to get it done? And thank you so much for taking this on.
Thank you for listening to us.
Thank you. Outstanding. All right, next is agency reports, and we've got Veterans Affairs to give us our quarterly report today. I know I saw two of our commissioners.
Come on up.
There's two.
Oh. Yeah. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning.
Brett, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing really good.
My Brett. Yes. I'm Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Greetings from the Commission of Veterans Affairs. Yeah, I have two commissioners, Lynn Lathrop, VA commissioner with us today, and Commissioner Pat Pekin, who is serving as our chair this year. All right. Well, you've had a great meeting so far. I hope to make it better.
You're not asking for money, are you?
I'm not. You know, one thing I would, when we were talking this morning, I would add the Ames Veterans Memorial that we worked on. Veterans worked on that for 4.5 We didn't think it was going to take 4.5 to 5 years. But where the money really started coming in is when they started building. Build it, and they will. The money comes to us. That's what we thought. So, but the city of Ames really helped us out with the land on that and some other things. So, all right, to our quarterly report on county assistance, we assisted two veterans for rent assistance, which was 900, and one veteran came in for utility assistance, which was $233.26. Total there was $1,133.26. During the quarter, we interviewed 225 veterans and surviving spouses might be eligible for federal and state benefits. And in that group, we've seen 31 World War II veterans, some for the first time. Sad to say, they're just, and some are just now looking at their benefits as they're getting older. And we've seen 26 who served during the Korea War, 60 during the Vietnam War.
I just think that's phenomenal, Brett, that we're finally starting to really see a large number of our Vietnam War vets. I mean, so many of them for so many years didn't even want to acknowledge that they had been part of that. And the work that you guys are doing in outreach specifically to that generation, our generation,
right.
Is outstanding.
And the Vietnam book has really helped. I mean, we're seeing veterans we never would have seen, I don't believe, and we had never seen up to 60 since we've been doing this last June.
Right.
And several of those claims filed due to the effects of Agent Orange. For Persian Gulf, we've seen 15. Peacetime or the Cold War, we've seen 35. And then our younger veterans, Iraq and Afghanistan, 12. And surviving spouses, there's some benefits for surviving spouses. Most of these were in nursing homes. We've seen 46. And enrolled 32 into the VA healthcare system. On the veterans books issued, during the quarter, 185. Brings us to a total of 308 Vietnam veterans and surviving spouses. We even have some books in the school libraries and the public libraries, along with a Boy Scout troop that wants to do some research on the Vietnam War. We gave them some books, too, to work off of that. So currently on hand, we have 202. Checking with other counties, everybody has plenty of books. So we're digging hard here now to find these other veterans and get them their books, and we'll be So every day we're working on that. The commissioners, a couple of commissioners have a case in their car. So as they see veterans around the county, they can give those to them. And last quarter, we actually issued 123, which we sent a check to the state for those. Okay. Outreach. January 4th, we delivered our second truckload of donations from Story County residents. Thank you if you donated to the Iowa Veterans Home. Also, when we went over there, we did a mini tour of the Veterans Home. On January 17th, the commission and I attended Veterans Day at the Capitol, as we always do. And matter of fact, I think Pat and somebody else
Russ,
was in the paper.
Yeah,
in the
they had a paper. Picture of us in the paper, yes.
Right in the front row. I don't know where I was. I feel like I was standing right next to them, but they got it in the paper. So we had a good day down there. I think the only bill that we're seeing, of course, the allocation is kind of at limbo right now. We don't really know how that allocation is going to turn out. Normally it was $10,000. Last year it was $9,475. Part of the problem in the state on that is $32,000 of the $1 million appropriation was returned. So some of the counties aren't spending that money, which is going to affect the counties that are spending the money, right? Probably looking at it saying, well, maybe they don't need that much money, and so we don't know what it's going to be this year, but that's all done at the end of the session, I believe, with a lot of other allocations. It all gets mixed in. So January 18th, we had a county American Legion meeting in Nevada. Several of our commissioners were there, and it's a really good time for the county. Just about every American Legion post has a rep there. And so it's a good way for us to get any kind of veterans information out to them and they can get back to their members. February the 1st, I was part of the point in time count that was done in the county. It was a cold day, and we found five out there living in the street. One was at the ISU bus station, who were counting where they slept at on that, you know, the night before. And we found an RV down on Duff Avenue. Two were in there, and two was at Iowa Center living in an RV.
So the bus station, are you talking about the intermodal facility or that's down on Hayward?
No, it's over in Campus Town.
Okay.
And I mean, this is, when you think about it, you know, were they all guys? No. I mean, there was, in Iowa Center, there was a man and wife living there in an RV that, I mean, an RV that they bought, they thought they'd just use on the weekend several years ago, and now they're, they've been in there for 18 months now. And on Duff, there was two guys that was living in that RV, and the bus station was, I think that guy was 19, almost. So it's out there, and it's in our community. And on March the 5th, we did a VA outreach with Jason Chiquin. I worked with him, trying to get that set up at ISU. We did it in the sunroom. We only had 10 people show up at that one. He was rather disappointed. But that's how the first one goes sometimes. I think we had seven at our first supermarket. So I kind of working with him, let's do it again in the fall. And it was really, really good. We had a panel discussion. We had about seven of us on a panel just answering questions and good information shared. March 6th, we did district training, which was held up in Webster City. It's a... About 14 counties are in our district. Really good setup for training to have a small group like that on issues that other counties are having. Again, I think, wow, how fortunate to be in Story County, again, when I hear the other issues that they have in their counties. So I want to thank the board for the support you give the VA office here. Upcoming events, April 17th, next week, April 17th to the 19th, Aaron and I will be attending VA training in Des Moines. May 11th, our newsletter will go out, roughly 3,200 by mail, 600 by email. And May 18th, we've got some flyers back here. It's going to be our annual appreciation day from 10 until 2 at the Moose Lodge in Ames. Music, food, health care, and haircuts. And also at that one, we're going to recognize Hy-Vee for all that they have done and are doing for our veterans. If you've ever seen the breakfast that they do on Veterans Day for several years, not to mention the food at the Veterans Appreciation Day is coming from Hy-Vee. I mean, it's just, they're just consistently, and they help us with the Freedom Flight. I mean, to the point, just get a grocery cart and fill it up and bring it up here and we'll just check you out kind of stuff with the Freedom Flight. So we really want to thank them, and so we're going to do something kind of special at our program. May 25th at 1 p.m. at Dakin's Lake, we'll do a dedication. I'm getting a flag that's flown over at the U.S. Capitol that day. We'll also have a POW flag.
And a question there, saying that I'm so appreciative for the work that the commission put in and working with Conservation Ryan, you guys, to get that done. That was one of those oversights that nobody really considered until it was pointed out that we didn't have a flag at Dagan's Lake. But I got a request from a couple people on the Zeering City Council. Have we checked with the people of the Zeering City Council to see if the 25th is the right day to do this? Because I just got a question about it from a couple people at Zeering. I don't know what, if any, flexibility we have. Maybe that's what we've got to do. But since that lake is in such close proximity to Zeering, I'd like for them to have a full buy-in.
Okay. This is information I've got from Vietnam Veterans of America.
Okay.
Who is, they're pretty much supporting this one. They're paying for this one.
Okay.
But yeah, we can check into that. And that's pretty flexible. We can move that around if we
need
to.
The Vietnam Veterans of America. I mean, it's their event, right?
Yeah.
So, let's check in and see what. If nobody's reached out yet to the mayor of Zeering, it'd be worth reaching out and just seeing what we can do.
All right, we'll do that.
What within reason we can do.
And so that's coming along real good. And then also May 28th at 2 p.m. is going to be a dedication at the B-17 Memorial, which is north of, if you've never seen this, the best way to get there is you go up, use the Maxwell Road, make a left at, there's a sign at Iowa Center that says City Hall. It's on an old building. And just turn there. It's about 2 miles down that road.
Yep.
I finally found it. And it's a stone down there with a plaque on it right now. So so that's kind of where we're at. Also, Board, you got a copy of our stats here for all of last year and this fiscal year. To point out something, it's interesting. I was looking back. I looked at the last three out of 4 years. We've been between 21 and 23% of the budget spent at this particular time, right on track somehow. So I wanted to point that out to you. And looks like we're averaging this fiscal year 102 veterans, and most of those are for federal benefits. Well, with that said, Pat, you have anything to add?
About the only thing I have to add is I want to thank you for supporting us. And also, when you added the two new commissioners, they were younger, mm-hmm. and they have lots of great ideas, and all of a sudden we're on Instagram. Even my daughter called me and asked me, why are you on Instagram? But anyway, we're there in order to report things that's going on, and that's one way to contact the younger vets, especially the ones at Iowa State, and because they, if you notice in this report, you don't have too many people coming in for benefits. And so they have ideas about maybe having a support day for them, too, like we do with the Vietnam and the World War II and Korean War veterans.
Well, I still appreciate the makeup and the enthusiasm. enthusiasm of your entire board, and I really like that we have multiple demographics represented and that you guys all do kind of push and pull each other along in certain ways, and I just think it's cool. Plus, that having Lynn on Instagram is the greatest thing ever. So.
Yeah, we spent a little time in our last commission meeting educating everybody about this, so I think we've got everybody on board.
Thank you guys so much. Morris, Marty, anything?
I mean, it was just using the decisions up here. We just came out of several pretty deep dive conversations. But one of the things I had said there, and just in taking into light what your organization does, is the fact that we brought Aaron Rewerts in on a halftime basis, giving Brett the flexibility to step out in the community and yet still handle the walk-ins. And frankly, the office was getting too busy for you to do both, and we decided that we were putting Aaron in there. And I hear good things from a number of people. The commission clearly is active and trying to identify everybody out there. And I just keep doing what you're doing.
Absolutely. And it was, man, I'll just point this out because Aaron rightly gets a lot of credit and has been a huge help. But it was more than that. We also got part use of several support staff members that you did not have before.
Right.
And I just feel like. So we've got this great VA commission, we've got this unbelievably good VA director, and now we put him in a position structurally to really be able to do what you guys are supposed to be doing, and I just think it's outstanding.
Yep. Like you say, the service ones, I mean, right now there's people there to greet veterans as they come in. Aaron's doing a great job. She's been long enough where she can get frustrated because working with the VA, it's like we're in a fast-paced environment in our office with things, and then it goes into the mail, and then we go in this slow, I mean, up to 4 years sometimes before that actually gets done. So every once in a while I can see where she's feeling the frustration.
Don't let her kid you, though. She dealt with that with Social Security decisions for years where it takes forever.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Laura, anything?
I want to thank you that I see that we now have the Veterans Affairs agenda also appearing on kind of our group page for agendas and minutes.
Yep.
So thanks for asking or getting whoever did that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Melanie's doing that for me and getting that all out there for everybody to see.
Appreciate
so let me know if there's any problems with that. But
no, but it was, thank you for the, it was nice.
Outstanding. Thank you, guys. Pat, thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Lynn, good to see you. All right, next is Child Serve Annual Report. Still morning. I wasn't convinced when we started we were going to get to you. Still morning.
Well, thanks for having me. My name is Michelle Flory, and I'm the program manager out at ChildServe. Our mission is to help children with special health care needs live the right life, and our vision is to provide the best care that we can for those children and families. Statewide, we serve over 4,000 children. In Story County, we serve right around a little over 700. So lots and lots of children with special health care needs that we're trying to improve their life and quality of life in the future. We recently went through accreditation process, and we did reach the 3-year accreditation with CARF. So we're pretty excited about that. We have nothing to improve on other than finding our own ways to improve. So we got no deficiencies.
Wow.
Great survey. So pretty excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, ChildServe Ames provides 6 core services. So I'm going to kind of move back just to Ames. Focus on that community in Story County. We have, again, 700 children across Story, Boone, Marshall, Hardin, Webster, Greene, and Polk counties. We serve Polk County up through about the Ankeny area. We don't go much further than the Ankeny, then our Johnston location takes on those children. So our 6 core services, the first one is child care. So we are currently receiving asset funds, child care assistance for those families. The asset funds support between 6 and 8 families a year. We also receive DHS funding for our child care center as well, and that provides assistance to about 12 to 15 additional families. Our number enrolled currently is 104 children. Your license for 116. So we're looking at, you know, opening enrollment for another infant room here in the next few months. Outpatient therapy, that focus is to provide pediatric therapy for children with special health care needs, and we partner with the primary care physician and the family to reach those goals for each of the children. We currently have enrolled 396 children in our therapy programs, a variety, speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, adaptive equipment, social skills group. We started a feeding clinic so that a dietitian and an occupational therapist and a speech therapist can work with families where their children are having feeding and swallowing issues. So that is something new that we just started in the last few months. And we've also started concussion therapy and attention skills therapy with the metronome system. So lots growing there in our outpatient therapy. It's our fastest growing service. Another new program that we started, a core service, is Day Health. This program features integrated therapy, nursing, and early intervention, skill development for children that are Medicaid eligible and they have a special health care need. We serve that child through 6 years of age. So it's the early interventions that we're focusing on. Amazing results and outcomes we are seeing with that program. There's two different programs within that service line. There's a medical day health program that focuses more on nursing, ventilator, those the more extreme medical cares. And then we started an autism preschool program this past fall. We have 6 children currently enrolled, and it partners with Northwood Preschool as well. So, you know, we start at age 2. So we're starting that early intervention. We're hoping in the next couple of years we'll see great progress in those children as they move into Northwood and then move on into the community schools. Amazing results and outcomes that we're seeing in those two programs. Another program is our rehabilitation. It assists and supports individuals in developing and maintaining their life skills needed to live on their own while increasing integration in the community. We only have a summer program for our rehabilitation. We are currently serving between 10 and 15 teens. So we start our program at age 16. We end it at age 21, and then they transition into mainstream living, friendship arcs, rehabilitation programs. Supported community living, it provides services to children to build skills, reach goals, and increase independence in their home and in their community. Again, a wide range programming, individualized for each child. We serve 64 children currently in that program. We try really hard to keep the children in their home community. So if they live in Maxwell, finding things that they enjoy in their community, volunteering opportunities within their community, not bringing them always to Ames to get that. Respite gives families a break, which families need. We are currently enrolled with 118 children in our respite care. Number of services within respite. We provide it in their home, but we also provide it in our center out on Dayton and 13th Street. We do that 3 weekends a month where the families can drop their child off on a Friday night and pick them up on a Sunday. It gives them a break. It gives the kids an opportunity to integrate with other children, gain social skills, get out into the community with our staff, learn cooking. We have them cook on those weekends. They do their laundry on those weekends. So a lot of living skills that they're learning and a break for the family. Summer services begin June 4th. They are, you know, going through August 10th this year. We have a camp program for our elementary age children. We have the Dayhab program for the teens. In the fall, we always host a community carnival event just to give the community a chance to come see our space. We are currently undergoing a playground renovation. Again, we've been in the Ames community or Story County for 18 years. Our playground has seen its better days. It's unsafe, and so we're doing our best to raise funds to provide, you know, better surfacing. And that's really all, our only focus is drainage, you know, surfacing and fencing. So things that you have to have in order to run a childcare program and to serve 700 kids in our community. So that's our current project. Probably our biggest challenges is the new managed care organizations. I'm not even going to go down that road with you guys, but last year I did apply for asset funding for our respite and supported community living programs so that when the children lose the managed care support, they can get that support from the county. It is short-term or long-term, you know, but at least it's another funding source that we can reach out to get those needs met.
Well, allows you to continue to provide the services even when funding becomes uncertain, which sadly has become the reality for a county board of supervisors to try to fill that funding gap in our current.
So thank you.
Well, thank you for what you're doing. Laura Stone-Martin, questions or comments?
No, I would have to say I knew it was an expansive program. What I wish we had a PDF that I could have, instead of listening to it, could have read it, but there's a lot of things I already knew were there.
Okay, good note. Next time, a year from now when you come. Good PDF with the report on it. We'll have it. Laura, anything?
Just thank you. I think we're lucky to have ChildServe here in the community.
Yep.
You serve a very unique population, so many needs. And thank you for all for your staff.
Awesome. And we're falling in the same boat as many of these other organizations.
Yep.
We ran out of space. What are we going to do in the future?
Well, thank you so much.
Yep, thank you.
Absolutely. Next, consideration of minutes from April 3rd.
Move consideration as presented.
Second.
Motion is second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consideration of personnel actions as listed, board.
Move as presented.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel action items pass. Consent agenda, just a reminder that we are not considering item, well, what is that, 19, which is the SciBiz Labs deal with Tedesco, looking at economic impact analysis, but everything other than that.
I would like to just pull 22, the ISU design for child signage. Sorry, Ryan, on this. It's just a little thing. Okay. I would move that we approve the consent agenda as presented with the exception of the ISU design for child signage.
Second.
Motion and a second, noting 19 and 22 are not part of it.
Right.
Yep. Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. All right, let's deal with 22.
And I just want to make a note that I did see that the contract began in February on this one, and we're just being asked to approve it. It's a small contract. It's for $200 with a design group at Iowa State. So I just wanted to be consistent in why we're seeing a contract that appears to already have been undertaken.
I honestly would have to check on that date for you. I'm not sure why.
Sorry.
Yeah,
I emailed the other one. I'm sorry, I forgot this one.
Yeah.
So.
And Laura, if it's okay, let's go ahead and get this approved, and then let's make sure we talk about it next week when Mike's here to talk about the others.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
So would you make that motion?
I would move that we approve the ISU design contract for the wayfinding, and we just get a response. It could be for whatever you know. Thank you.
Super. Motion for approval. Marty, you have a second?
Yes, I have a second.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
That gets us through. No public hearing items today, so we're additional items. Discussion consideration of public access defibrillation policies and procedures for the Human Services Center. Alyssa, this one you want to waive 7-day review.
I do. This is it's the same as we did for the administration building. We purchased the medical oversight, which included the policies and procedures for our AED through the AED Superstore. Or I think it's Anuvia. There's two different names there. There isn't really anything to change. So there's no reason.
We're just copying what we already have here. All right. Any questions or can I have a motion?
Move consideration of public access to regulation policies and procedures for a human services center out for a 7-day review.
No, seven-day review.
Waiving the 7-day review.
I will second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Waiving 7-day review. Further discussion? Cheney?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. No 7-day review. Now, Derek comes next with the 5-year road calendar, which we've had a chance to talk about, and now is our date to get it submitted. Morning, Darren.
Yes.
Thank you.
Darren?
We held a work session, and I put it on for additional items just to see if there was any additional comments before we finally approve it. It is due into the DOT by April 15th, so I do need action on it today. Mm-hmm. The budget, DOT budget was on the consent agenda, so that was pretty well set. So with that, let me pull up my... Since the work session, the only thing that was really adjusted, if we had a bridge project, let me pull up the map here, it's a little hard to see there, but it was down by Collins, just a little bit to the west. We switched two bridges, added one bridge and took one bridge off. That's the only change we had since our work session, and that's reflected in the program map behind you already. Marty, you may have an additional project to talk about here if you want to address that. I've got some slides.
I don't have a page number, but it would be the project LG3-73-85. It's a 220th Street pavement project. I would think since we were apportioning engineering study here on a pavement, potential pavement, I would like to take an additional mile east. We have a conversation in regards to whether there is any merit and any desire to partner, either do it ourselves, and we did move the designation farm to market, and or partner with the city of Nevada on a paving initiative.
Yeah, so you're taking a project that we currently have listed in our 5-year calendar, but we only have it listed running to 600, 580 to 600. You're asking that we go the extra mile to the east as part of that project. Just instead.
This stretch is in the program. Nevada has jurisdiction on both sides of the road, so our project stops here. We'll be talking to Nevada. Hopefully they'll work with us to extend that. And this is the mile Marty's proposing to add to the project. Just a couple more slides. DOT's updated the farm to market map. So this is the newly added farm to market road. Our current project stops here at City of Nevada, and then Marty would like to add that to it. Looking at ADTs, coming off of 13th Street pavement here. The first mile of gravel is 250 vehicles a day. Drops to 180, then we still have 120 in that mile stretch.
My thought is, as you hear the City of Ames discuss with the build-out of Barilla and their siding tracks to the closure of 580th, you only have north-south access to Lincoln Highway from Dayton Avenue in Ames to S-14 in Nevada. I suspect this road traffic is, Darren can tell you, it's a heavily trafficked farm road that gets tore up with the heavy equipment, and it is already used as a intermodal between Ames and Nevada anyway. And I think that, to me, the conversation turns in the fact that the rationale that we use to propose paving to the west is also the same rationale I propose to the east on a connector basis.
Darren, what does it do to the plan if we were to go ahead and add that mile here as you go through the planning process? Does it commit us to doing it, or does it just become a possibility?
Our 5-year plan is just a planning document. It can be changed, so it's not committing us to anything at this point.
I think it's worth looking into. Laura, I don't know.
Oh, I've driven it. more and more, either I tend to come over on 220th and then go south on 580, and already there are more and more trains there. So now I'm pretty much going East 13th to Dayton and down, or if I decide to play it lucky,
see a train, I'm on that gravel. I'm on 220th all the way to S14th. And there's no question about that. I feel the traffic's going to kick up. I think if we went out and did a traffic count over a few days, we'd be right there. I just, following up on Rick's question I had about, then do we have to put an estimated amount in there at this point for the planning document?
Yes. I have an updated copy with that change and one without
okay.
it. So
we can
go either direction.
You're right. Okay.
Yeah.
And so then the other question, Marty, I heard you visiting with Darren about the possibility of upgrading a level C to a level B. That would not need to be part of any of this. This is strictly for payment. Okay, so dealing with what we've got, any other questions or comments? We've got one potential change right there on 13th Street, adding to that project. Is there anything else that we want to talk about as part of our five-year plan?
No, I think we did a very thorough job back in.
Be a little more specific, that would add $900,000 to the project.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for doing that on short notice because I thank you.
Absolutely. So, Mark, do you want to make a motion?
I would move adoption of the FYA 19, Iowa Department of Transportation Secondary 5-year road construction program as presented by Darren this morning.
Which one? So the one he originally had or the one we just talked about?
We
have two possibilities.
The amended.
So the amended, including the additional mile worth, will you second that?
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chee?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Darren, thanks.
Thank you.
Next is a response letter to DOT regarding Highway 30 and the proposed 580th interchange. Okay, so to get us up to speed, DOT has been working on this for literally years. And in their most recent plan, they sent out, we had multiple questions. We drafted a letter as a board and sent it to DOT and asked questions about who would pay for the side streets, who would be responsible for maintaining them, have they considered 580th, our discomfort with going ahead and closing 590th in this original part of the project. And we sent that to DOT, and they sent us a response to which Darren has drafted a response to their response.
Okay. Just to summarize their response letter quickly, they did comment they would be building the frontage roads at the DOT's cost, as well as the rest of the interchange. The county would be asked to own and maintain the frontage roads. Those are all the local connectors that are shown on this map. They also said they are now proposing to leave 590th Avenue open here at Highway 30 until, one, they either have an increased safety concern or there's build-out to the east with an interchange of 600th.
Right. But 590th would not close as part of this project.
Yes.
That's what they're saying.
Yep. And that was basically it from the letter. There really was no comment on the 580th question we had. They asked if the county had any specific possible concerns with the closure of the UP River crossing. So, I drafted a letter with our responses. In essence, I first thanked them for agreeing to leave 590th open to Highway 30, and then we understand the DOT will need to close this in the future if those two things happen. We understand the DOT plans to fund the construction of the interchange and the associated frontage roads. It is also proposed that the county take ownership. And this is where I had one question raised. It makes sense for some of those frontage roads to be county owned and maintained, but the one to the north local connector, I question whether that should be county maintenance. It goes back to the DOT facility, and they should be able to provide.
They're going to be on it every day multiple times a day. And then the other one that I had a question that you addressed is the one just south, which my understanding is that they actually own that stretch, right?
240 right here. They paid that, I don't know what that was, about 10 years ago. We had to pay for a little bit of the intersection payment, but they paid to do the rest. So when this happens, there will be a new local connector that connects into it, and they show that as pavement. So who will maintain this that's currently maintained by the DOT, and then who will maintain the local connector that connects into it? But I just kind of left that open, as those are discussions we'll want to have as they, you know, move forward. It's 4 to 5 years out.
Yeah, so just off the cuff here, I would have real interest in seeing if DOT would be willing to maintain from Lincoln Highway down the back road that, of course, you had a safety concern not too many months ago.
566.
566, down 566 all the way around to the new local connector. And if they take that one, then we pick up 241st, which means that we have to have somebody go down in there and turn around.
Steve Haynes had it annexed about half of that down, about half a mile.
Okay.
Road, but in our maintenance agreement, we still maintain it for the city of Haynes.
So. Which now, since we're not doing anything on Lincoln Highway anymore, it's even more problematic for us.
Right. So yes, that's something to be proposed. And the only other thing I was questioning was this local connector, whether you put that in now since they're leaving this open at 590th. I kind of left it as, DOT is willing to pay to put it in now. We might as well let it go in now, and we'll probably take over the maintenance on it.
Okay. Questions or comments on the proposed draft letter?
No, there's a lot of moving parts here, and you really get no commitment that they are engaged with us. As far as what we have questions about, I appreciate what you're doing on the back and forth, but you know, when you get asked what's happening on New 30, well, it's hard to say give up anything firm other than the fact that this is the latest iteration of a presentation to a potential intersection proposal, and this is our concerns with it. We haven't heard back, and that's where we are today.
But I just want to point out, I'm appreciative that DOT was actually responsive. Many times, you don't get quite this level of responsiveness out of them. I think they were really responsive to our concerns and have presented something that, while we still got some details to work out, seems to be pretty workable. The reality is something's got to give there at 580. The 580 Highway 30 interchange, it absolutely needs to be a controlled access. It's what happens because of that that we've got to work through. And it just looks to me like this is a really favorable response. And Darren, I think what you drafted here is completely appropriate for us to send back.
I agree, and maybe it was because so many of us showed up at the last DOT, the last version presentation, the open house, but there were a lot of people from either Story County or Nevada moving in and out that night. I would move that we approve this letter for Chairman Sanders' signature and to be sent out.
I would second that.
Motion and second. Further discussion?
No.
Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Darren, thanks very much. We're going to take a 5-minute recess, and when we come back, Marty, you'll have the helm.
Okay, copy. You can swap that out with the other one.
All righty.
Guys. So we are going to... Well, let's take us back. We'll get started.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
I haven't heard back, Joby, on the power issue, but sitting there and down there, maybe someone went and flipped the breaker box and gives you some...
Yeah, like I said, I haven't talked to Portman since he was down there
doing
some inventory stuff. So.
Yeah, I sent something after I saw you guys outside yesterday. I sent something to Melissa and I never did hear back. So but this is an easy fix.
Oh, yeah, that's I just figured I'd, you know...
Okay.
You didn't even give me her contact information.
I haven't done that yet? Okay.
Just other outside, all I got is a first name.
So okay, I can remedy that for the day's end, so I'll see you later.
Thank you. Thanks, Marty.
All right, bring us back to our meeting. We are now going to hold item 4, the consideration of the project for the TELC. No, for the Dakins Lake Impact Analysis for next week's meeting. Brings us to Alyssa and item 5, discussion and consideration of the Delta Dam renewal in addition to the TUGO benefit. Alyssa, take it away.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
We're in that time where we get all our renewals for our benefits. And Delta Dental came back and they have an add-on benefit that we can put on our plan. It's called the TUGO benefit. So it would allow employees to carry over that annual max or whatever they don't use for next year. So I am recommending that we do add that. We are self-insured for our dental. They say it will be approximately, they anticipate about 2% of claims. So I did take a look at that. I also, every time with our renewal, Delta Dental will give us the adjusted rate based on our claims. I am recommending that we do decrease our current rates. When we went to self-insured a year and a half ago, we used our fully insured rate. It is 1 year. The rates will cover the claims, and next year they won't, but it kind of works itself out with dental. So I am recommending that we use the actuarial-based suggested rates from Delta Dental for this, beginning this fiscal year. That's all outlined in that letter.
I would so move that we accept that. As presented, we accept Alyssa's recommendation as presented on dental.
I second that. Olson?
Aye.
Schitte?
Aye.
Brings us to item six, discussion consideration of holiday policy for 7-day review.
The next various items on the agenda are in response to, and you approved the union contract in your consent agenda earlier in the meeting. Some of the items are being moved to the employee handbook. What I did is I took a look at all the contracts, and now I'm making a few minor suggested changes. These are new policies. The way the county has operated in the past, we've always had an employee handbook. We have not had the personnel policies that typically you take to derive your employee handbook from. So we're kind of working a little bit backwards here. But the first policy would be the holiday policy. I do want to just make note, the only change to the current handbook would be that the employee would be paid at the overtime rate for hours worked on a holiday. So if we have a situation where we need to bring our employees in, it would be considered automatic overtime. Okay. Whereas in the handbook right now, it would just be figured into a 40-hour work week, and depending on what else they work that week, it would be determined whether it's overtime or not.
So it works out better for the employee to be compensated.
If they're pulling it in on Christmas Day or whatever holiday it may be, they will be guaranteed that whatever they work that day would be at the overtime rate. They'll still get the holiday compensation.
Okay, good.
In addition to that. But if we're bringing them in because it's a snowstorm or we have an employee on call and they need to come in and fix something.
IT occasionally has happened.
Yeah.
We're still holding holiday pay as overtime pay. To me, that's where it goes, and not fine with that. So we'll consider a motion unless you get any further questions.
I will move that we accept the new holiday policy and put it out for 7-day review.
I would second that. Olson?
Aye.
Kitty.
Aye.
Thank you, Alyssa. You're back up again. Discussion and consideration of on-call and the callback compensation policy for 7-day review.
I just want to note, I'm not here next Tuesday, so it's 7-day review, but I won't be bringing them back for 2 weeks. So it'll give the employees another week to comment.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. The next draft policy would be the on-call and callback compensation policy. We currently do not have anything. This would be new. We have had this covered either within a department policy or a union contract in the past. This will pull everything together so that we're handling all these employees consistently with on-call and call-back. The on-call compensation portion came directly from the union contract that it was addressed in. The call-back compensation, it would be if an employee is called in, they're not scheduled to work. We have to call them back into work for some various reason. They would be paid a minimum of 2 hours to do that. We do pay travel time when they come back in. Rarely is it less than 2 hours if we're bringing them in for some reason. But that is in here that they get a minimum pay of 2 hours. And that's consistent with what has been in our union contract.
Okay, so no one's losing anything with this. I would move that we accept the on-call compensation policy that is now presented to go into the handbook and put it out for 7-day review.
I want to just make one comment. It's at regular rate. There were some differences. Some were paid at regular rate. Some were paid at the overtime rate. But this policy says we will pay them 2 hours at their regular rate.
Okay, so that may be a change for
a little bit of a change. It won't impact a lot of them who are working more than 40 hours a week.
And it's just norms all the departments.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't follow anybody out special. It just says this is our policy, this is how the employees and start right. Counting your health, which I think that's where we're trying to get to anyway. Yeah. I would second that. So Olson.
Aye.
Schitte. Aye. Thank you. Number 8, discussion of consideration of overtime compensation policy also for 7-day review.
Okay. This policy is our overtime policy. It addresses the positions that are eligible, which would be your non-exempt positions, scheduling and working overtime. That's no different than what's in our current handbook. It has to be approved by a supervisor. Comp time consistent with what the majority of the employees have, which is they're able to get up to 40 hours in their comp bank. This will be a change. We have one department, one group of individuals within a department that were allowed to get 60 hours. Now it'll be consistent so that they're all at 40. Those that don't, that will be impacted by this policy.
And which department is likely to be affected?
Our secondary roads union contract said they were allowed to accrue up to 60 hours. But everybody else, even the employees within secondary roads that were covered by the administrative contract, were only able to accrue up to 40.
So now all of
everybody
employees
also, are all the
same.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One other thing that our handbook has had in there would be that employees are, they have to use comp time before vacation unless they're going to lose vacation. And that will be a change for a couple of the unions, some of the union employees, consistent with how we've administered it according to the handbook for years.
Okay. The only comment I have, you've got a couple of typos in this one. Okay. So I would move that we approve this overtime compensation policy as being presented today and put it out for 7-day review.
Second. Olson.
Aye.
Keating. Aye. Number 9, discussion and consideration of paid leave policy for 7-day review.
This policy addresses your bereavement leave or your funeral leave, jury and witness duty leave, and voting leave. It is consistent with what's in the current handbook. There were some differences amongst the union contracts, so now we're all bringing them in, so all these employees will be handled the same. Under bereavement leave, the 40 hours for an immediate family member, it's more descriptive. The son-in-law and daughter-in-law were not in our handbook, but we administered it that they received 40 hours. So that I did make that change. In addition to what's current practice in our handbook, included in this policy would be 8 hours may be granted to an employee when attending a funeral service for an employee's aunt or uncle. Some of the contracts had some provisions in there for an aunt or uncle. It's been brought up in the past, so it is it was put in the draft for your consideration.
Okay. Well, I like trying to keep as much as we can in for any employees. So I'm sorry. What do we have as far as who might be losing something?
In terms of what's different,
yeah.
I believe the administrative contract that's been in force for 2 years, I have to double check this. I believe they get 3 days for an aunt or uncle, up to 24 hours.
And has that been used a lot?
It would be two of
your departments.
Various departments, I'm not aware of that.
Okay.
But that's the only, our secondary road contract, the only thing that was listed was the son and daughter-in-law, that we administer it for 40 hours, which is reflected in the new
policy. Which they were getting.
Mm-hmm. Right. Checking whether peer counties.
Yeah, it varies on what they do. I mean, some of them they don't go down to the, they don't even cover aunt or uncle. They don't go down quite that
okay.
far.
Okay.
There are some entities and some agencies that give you just a block of time in the calendar year, like you get 11 days, regardless of
how you use it.
That's what you have. We don't administer it that way, and we haven't. Mainly because you don't know. I mean, an employee could have both parents. They could have a sibling. They could have a child in the same
True.
Year. So this is how we've administered it. Instead of just giving the employees a set number of days per
okay.
year.
Thank you. I know we're not to the end, but as the decision was made to move any of these to the policy handbook of things that had been in the contracts before, I know that the staff, some staff covered by the contracts, had some concerns. So even though this is a change for the administrative unit, thank you for leaving in the aunt and uncle. Okay. So with that, I'll move.
I just say I look forward to seeing what we get back on review.
Yeah.
On the comments there. So I think maybe your concerns will get fleshed out or not.
Yeah, it's difficult to have a policy that covers everybody in every situation that they would encompass. But I think this does a good job of giving them the time they need to grieve and attend that.
Okay.
Attend those funerals.
So I will move the paid leave policy as presented in a It's a sick and leave policy, right?
Paid leave policy.
As presented and out for a 7-day review.
Second. Olson.
Huh?
I second it, Olson.
A motion here. from the side. Yeah, okay.
Are we good?
We're on board.
Okay, right. Thank you. Number 10, discussion and consideration of the revised classification and compensation policy. And then push it out for 7-day review.
Yes, one of the items that we needed to address in the current contract, we have a supplemental pay provision. So in our administration contract, our maintenance techs received, if they had an electrical license, they received an extra amount per hour for having that. It's not a requirement in order to hire them, but if they do have that electrical license and we employ them, they're able to provide different services for us.
As opposed to purchasing from a contractor.
Correct, from a contractor. So it is a benefit to the county. You know, if we have an employee that comes in, we can't get them certified or gain that license, but they happen to work for us because of that. There, you know, to make it consistent across various departments and offices, I have had some requests that there are some positions that they have certain certifications or go through certain training, and of the individuals, there's one in their department that can provide this because of a training or certification that they have. The other individuals in that classification do not. So they have asked, you know, is there a way to compensate that employee for having that? And that is drafted in this policy under supplemental pay. The figures are, you know, in our current contract, the electrical license was a dollar extra. In order to encompass some other things, I did suggest we do a dollar for regular. If they hold a licensure and a master's trait, it would be an extra $2. And there is benefit, obviously, for the county if we employ individuals with those licenses.
Well, I believe Joby was a licensed electrician. Right. And we had, I don't know how much money he saved us by having him here to do things.
Correct. And we currently don't have anybody to fill that void. But.
Exactly. And so the fact that if we were onboarding somebody that has this, we would be well served to get it as opposed to go out and have somebody bring in from the outside. So.
And just to know, this is for non-exempt employees. You know, I can't add a dollar figure differential for exempt employees for different types. They typically already have that built into their salary.
I would move the classification and compensation policy draft as presented today and to be put out for a 7-day review.
I would second that. Olson.
Aye.
Should be aye. Number 11, discussion and consideration of our sick leave policy for 7-day review.
The handbook currently has provisions for sick leave, family sick leave. That's everything in here. The addition to the handbook would be the sick leave donation. So what we've seen and what was in our administrative contract was the sick leave donation policy. So traditionally, a lot of your union contracts would have a sick donation bank where employees at the beginning of the fiscal year would donate up, you know, an hour of their personal sick leave and it would go into this bank. We have transitioned, and what you just approved, the two public safety contracts have gone to this sick leave donation. So instead of having a bank that in essence may not be there when certain employees, you know, they donated, but by the time they need it, another individual within that unit has utilized all that. So this would be a provision that if the need comes up, employees are able to donate at that time. We did have some comments that we didn't have this for non-union employees. Putting this in the policy and in the handbook, it would be all individuals except our two public safety contracts that would be able to participate in this benefit.
So it works out better in case we have an employee.
There's more individuals that can donate. Correct. And it's their choice whether they want to donate or not. You know, as it's administered, we haven't had to utilize it in the 2 years that we've had it in the contract. But it would go out that, you know what, we need up to 12 weeks of leave. First come, first serve, people donating. Individuals tend to be fairly generous when it comes to situations like this. And it's a good benefit if we have employees with catastrophic needs and they don't have any leave to utilize.
Okay.
In an instance where there was a donation needed, can elected officials donate, or since we're...
You don't have to leave on the books.
Okay.
No. All right. Sure. Or deputies don't either. Okay. It was just regular employees that accrue sick leave and donate to that.
I move that we approve the sick leave policy draft and put it out for 7-day review.
I would second that. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty. Aye. Number 12, discussion and consideration of our uniform allowance policy for 7-day review.
Again, this is an item that traditionally was included in a contract. We had various ways of how the uniform allowance was administered. This would kind of tie everything together so that all our departments are handling it. At least the departments that the public safety contracts are separate from here. But everyone would administer it the same. Still leaves it up to the department or elected official to have their own internal policy as to what uniforms are required. They can have that discretion as to what they require their employees. As this is written, the uniforms allowances, it would be done on a reimbursement basis. So they'd be allotted whatever was budgeted, $150, or I'm just throwing that number out there, a fiscal year. They would make the purchases and get reimbursed. We would also comply with any IRS regulations as far as the taxation of those items. It's very specific. Safety items, safety boots, are non-taxable. If you have other uniforms that can be worn for daily use, whether it's, I think, of jeans, those are taxable items, and we need to comply with IRS regulations on that.
Would move that we approve the uniform allowance policy as presented in its draft and put it out for 7-day review.
Olson.
Aye.
No, excuse me. Chitty second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty. Aye. Item 13. Discussion consideration of vacation policy.
Correct. This is my last one. I did these all at the same time so that you could kind of be able to go out to
Great.
Employees and comment all at once. Looking at the vacation policy, the actual amounts that are accrued have not been changed from the handbook. The only change would be the accumulation of what you can carry over. We've had some different carryover provisions depending on the contracts. They've been allowed to carry over a little bit more. In this policy as drafted, if an employee's been here 15 years, they can now carry over an additional 20 hours. So they'll have a 60-hour carryover versus the 40-hour. I looked at, you know, our public safety contracts, our deputy contracts have some different carryovers. It looks like at 15 years they get to carry over 60, so that's where that came from. And this would allow, we do have employees under another bargaining contract that are allowed to carry over 60. I believe they would be able to continue that instead of having to pay that out at the end of this fiscal year.
Okay. So once again, there's no employee that's really losing anything.
Well, and they wouldn't necessarily lose anything. They wouldn't be able to carry over quite as many. But if the board decided, let's just keep it at the 40, we would pay out whatever they have above the accumulated. So they weren't, like, just losing that vacation.
Okay. So we're rewarding longevity, too.
Yeah, for 15 years. And there are some employees that would like to, you know, they'd like to carry over a little more when they're planning a large trip the next year or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do see employees that can't even accrue. There are some, you know, looking at the lead time, if they're at their max accrual,
mm-hmm.
they just don't accrue. So there are situations where employees are at their max. They're not able to take the vacation at that time. They want to take it a different time of year. So this would allow for a little bit more accrual. It would, if an employee leaves, it is a little bit more of an unfunded liability. We do pay it out when they retire or they leave. There might be additional dollars that are spent at that point,
mm-hmm.
But they're not accruing at a higher rate than what current.
So the entirety of the accrual is paid out at the rate they leave at,
yeah.
even though it was earned at a lesser amount.
Mm-hmm. And that's typical of everything.
That's just the
facts. I guess that's a fair trade. I mean, we're moving things that in many instances used to be in union contracts. We're bringing them into the policy manual instead. So I think that we want to keep the employees as whole as possible, and we want it to be consistent across the board. And if we are paying out a little extra, they're a really long-term employee. They earned it. So with that, I will move that we put out the vacation policy for draft for a 7-day review.
I would second that. And Olson.
Aye.
Two.
All right. Yes, thank you, Alyssa. That was a lot of work. It went really fast, but you did a lot of checking, and I think that was very well done.
Once we get all done with the policies, there'll be a revised handbook at some point prior to July 1st.
I look forward to you and Alyssa will be having all these comments sent to you then?
I typically say they can send comments to myself, they can send it to a board member, they can come to the meeting where you guys discuss the final draft, and I'll bring all those comments back. It'll be 2 weeks from today instead of 1 week. And I'll ask that departments, I'll send the policies out to department heads and elected officials, and then they share it with their employees, so their employees have the opportunity to come and comment also, since it deals with personal policy.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that brings us to our one departmental report, so that brings Aaron back to give us a quarterly report, and see what you got, Aaron.
Well, I'm hoping winter's nearly over. It's been a long one. Hasn't been terribly hard on our budget, thankfully. We're still well under our $50,000 budget overtime. We have gone over that many times in the past, so the past 5 years or so haven't been too bad on our budget. We had a couple of picture shows. It doesn't do justice to the depth of that snow. That was a couple weeks ago. We had that 10 to 12 inch snow down south, so we had to call more goods in on a Sunday. And it was extra difficult because the thawing conditions, the gravel was so mixed up in the snow. Late in the year, we don't want to lose all of our gravel off the roads, so we have to be pretty careful on how we plow that. So it was really slow going, and you can see all the gravel in the. Usually, we throw that snow at high speed, and it just goes flying off the road. But we can't do that now. We'll lose all this gravel, so we kind of windrowed it on the side, so it melted it. Kept the rock on the road. I'd want to comment, we did have some salt delivery issues again this year. We kind of have that bottleneck in Ames, the sky. They had a rail issue that the railroad refused to send them a rail until they fixed it. So we had about a month gap, of course, right about when we were getting close to running out. So we're a little nervous, but we got through it without impacting our operations at all. But hopefully we'll get our Kelly shed built. We'll have a little additional storage put down there in the future. That'll help that situation some. Rock hauling. I guess this picture is put in there. So far, our gravel road conditions have been pretty decent. I don't know if we're through frost boil season yet. Usually we have at least a handful of frost boils every year, and we haven't had them yet, so I don't know if that frost is still down there. This was a road we had to put rock on because it was running so bad. That's because we had a project late in the year where we added dirt, built up the road some, so that was expected here. But so far, gravel road conditions are in pretty good shape. Gravel hauling, the blue roads are the far east side of the county is what we're going to haul by contract through Mark Marietta. This should start sometime in the next month. Usually we're starting to haul right about now, but with the weather, they're going to probably hold off a little bit until the roads are a little more solid. And then we'll fill in these gaps here, and then there's 4 miles north with our own crews filling those gaps. But as I mentioned before, this is the first time that part of the county is going to see limestone, the white rock.
Why would have been so long? Why would that be? I mean, in 2018, why would that be?
Why they haven't ever seen it?
Yeah.
Because we've had this Marshall County gravel pit right here, and it was more economic to haul it closer than it's a long haul from Mark Marietta to get here, so it costs nearly as much to haul it as this for the rock itself. So it's been more economic to haul out of this Marshall County gravel pit, which is now pretty well dried up. So,
okay.
And there's a lot of sand in that natural gravel material, so especially the roads down here. When we get a rain, they're really sloppy because it's sandy. It doesn't have that limestone fines to bind the road together. So I think they'll be happy with what they see. We're putting together some concrete sealing and pavement marking contracts. We need to get these cracks we have in our pavements filled as soon as possible. We keep moisture out of it. And we had a really couple really low temperatures this winter again that, especially our asphalt roads, it shrinks them up and causes these cracking. And it was when we can see the crack through the shoulder of the rock on the road, you know it's been a severe winter. And it, That was only a couple times it dipped out low, but it really caused a lot of cracking in our pavements. Construction update. It's a little hard to see on this, but the yellow dots are what we're doing this year. There's three bridges up here, one down here by Collins, Sand Hill Trail Bridge here, and then two. This is an asphalt overlay on West 190th, and then University's paving the gravel road. So far, we've got all projects led except for one, and we've been very pleased with our pricing this year. Everything's come in under estimate.
Good.
Yeah, we have done well.
Yeah,
we have done well.
The Lincoln 13 Bridge is actually going to start here in a couple weeks. Had a pre-construction meeting last week. The University paving, that was a DOT let project, and that came in at $781,000, and our estimate was $866,000. So pretty close to $100,000 under, and that's due to the paving going on the interstate. The same contractors are bringing in their portable plant, so we're able to benefit from that again this year. The only project left to let is this Sand Hill Trail Bridge right here, and that's let to the DOT next week. Construction project design, we're currently working on plans for six more bridges in FY19, and we're starting the survey and design work on 220th Street, just kind of doing some planning ahead on that, and that's the one we added the extra mile on today. So our surveyors are just about done with that, but I'll have them continue an extra mile just in case we're going to do that one as well. And I know we're going to have to start those discussions with Nevada about those 13th Street, their portions, and then this extra mile. So I think you talked to them some, so they're aware it's coming, but I need
just
to make some more
unofficial capacity. Just asked the temperature of what the city administration thought of doing it, and they thought the rationale that was offered up to do the paving up to that point was worthy of pushing out the additional mile. And since it's 3 years out, that gives them a little bit of lead time to go back if they want to. You know, I suspect you will have some outreach.
Yeah,
and I think that they're Matt is ready to have that discussion.
Yeah,
that's just their
additional mile, right? Because the thing is, they're already in for the north component, north of the tracks, and a half mile. Because as we had it up until we amended today, it was just a mile and a half of pavement. Because the city admitted there now to finish it, and I was surprised to hear that additional mile would be less than I suspected. I thought it would be right at a million. You said 900,000.
Yeah, that's this university that was 8/10 of a mile. They came in at 781, and it has a little bit more dirt work and culverts involved. So
okay,
that's about where we are.
As long as it's a farm and market road, as long as the width and it's shouldered in a way that represents the farm traffic that will be on it, and I think that we have a chance to do a real improvement here that people will use a lot.
Darren, does Nevada have ability to use farm to market funds, or will that have to be out of their general fund?
Let me get back to that slide, because that's kind of an interesting question. This is the farm-to-market route. The dark lines are the farm-to-market routes.
Mm-hmm.
This stretch here, that's all city, but it's still a farm-to-market road, and it's not necessarily city or county. It's just a farm-to-market road.
Okay.
We could actually spend our farm-to-market money all within the city limits. There is some rules on that. There are really strange rules on how far apart the houses are spaced in the area and stuff. But we haven't had to check into that yet, but this is a pretty rural area, so I think we don't have any problem spending money there if we wanted. This stretch here is all city as well. Even this side is not county. The city annex, both sides of the road. It is not farm market, so that would take local funds. So we cannot include that in our project. We could this stretch. Even if the city paid for it, we still included it in our project and design it, and they just have to reimburse us.
Okay.
This stretch we could not include. We can't legally spend money on a city road. It's not a farm market road.
No, it's not our concern. That's city data's.
Yeah, I just wondered if there was anything, you know, that we could do cooperatively.
That's a good question.
All right, well, thank you.
The fact that they do have their issues going forward, but they like to. I think it's a very a worthy project in the sense that which is going to serve Ames. You're going to see the build outs and the growth there on this quarter, both on the south side of the tracks and the north side. All you're doing is putting infrastructure in place today for the eventual tomorrow.
Moving on, 280th Street Skunk River Bridge closure. Had some updates on that. first, the county attorney has been working with the city of Ames on a temporary access agreement to use the city's private road. That's been going on for 3 to 4 months now. I don't think there's been a lot of progress. One thing I've been working on is finding a low-cost fix to the bridge. So we hired this contractor, bridge contractor, to come in for $8,000. We had him jack up the bridge, and they cut the existing cap, jacked the bridge up, and then you can see this is the broken cap you can see over here. So they removed the cap, and then we spliced in H-pile. It worked pretty good. We didn't know what these conditions of the piling were going to be underneath because they were buried by the bridge when it collapsed. Very good condition of those piles, so that was encouraging. The part that didn't work out perfectly was this alignment. The bearing has to sit right on top of this new cap, and so it didn't fit squarely on the other piling, which we can't move. But it was enough to make this work, so our bridge inspection contractors kind of looked at it as well, because they're the ones that term the load posting. So I don't really, I don't want to make it too public until I was 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure we're going to get this bridge back open in the next month or so.
Wow.
Two-car traffic.
Okay.
Existing posting is 18 tons for the lowest posting. I'm guessing we'll be around 5 to 10 tons, so that'll get a car over it, no problem.
Yeah.
And that doesn't bother me to lower that posting because I want to make it very evident to the farmers that they shouldn't have been using it in the past for those. Most of those loads they've been taking are 40 tons if they were taking semis over it. It was never built for that, you know. Even 50 years ago, it couldn't have taken that. That bridge wasn't designed for that. So the posting will be lower, and we have a couple of repairs we need to do in-house. This is the center of the bridge. The deck has dropped. There's a lot of wood bracing underneath that's getting old and rotten. So that would be a fairly easy fix. And then the slope is what I had my most concerns about over the years. It's really steep. They had a hard time even standing on it, so steep. And we've lost a lot of the riprap, so we need to. It's hard to get riprap under a bridge once it's in place. We're going to try to figure out a way to get riprap under there to protect that slope. But it shouldn't cost as much as it's difficult to get under there. So for less than $10,000, we're probably going to get this thing back open to car traffic, which will make the city of Ames happy, and maybe that'll, you know, spur on that agreement for a permanent agreement for the farmers to use their private road is the goal.
Well, $10,000 is great.
Yes.
Compared to the $1.4 million
we last heard.
Right. We understand, however, and I think everybody else needs to understand that this is a fix that seems to only will be able to work if people obey a greatly reduced load weight restriction. Would it be worth it to get more signs to put up, a bigger sign?
Well, we've got to change out all the load posting signs, and we have these red flags that stick off. I think we'll add those at the bridge, and then there's advance warning at the intersections approaching. So all those signs will be changed out. And it will be just one. Sometimes people, understandably so, get confused with the three-truck posting. This will have one weight limit, 5 tons, all vehicles. So there should be no question what vehicle they're crossing and what road limit they need to follow. So that should clear some of that up for them.
Good.
New shed construction. This is a picture of the rolling shed. They have, since the picture was taken, they put in the foundation and actually poured the slab. The Kelly shed, they put up the walls, and the latest picture, they've done this one a little different way. The slab hasn't been poured inside yet, but everything else is done, so a little bit different than the rolling. But it's moving along great. It's looking good. They still propose the middle of June for both of them to get wrapped up about the same time. Just a quick update on some road signage issues. This is something that's been a goal of mine for a long time, is to get all of our signs in a GIS system so they're mapped. We haven't had that. One software wasn't the best, but our service bureau in Des Moines for county engineers has developed some new software that's really great. The downside is we had to convert all 9,000 of our signs and put them on the proper place in the map. That took us a while. Our sign coordinator did that, so they are all mapped now. So anytime we're missing a sign now, we can just pull up the map and say there should be this sign here. But there is 9,000 signs. You probably wouldn't think there'd be that many, but there's a lot of signs out. We have 1,000 miles of roads, so that's been a goal. And now when we go out and do our night inspections, we run the system on a tablet, and when he drives down the road, he has to put down the condition of the sign. It automatically pops up the next sign as he's driving down the road, so he just hits one button and records the condition. So it's a really nice system. While I'm talking about signs, we're doing a couple of signage improvements with conservation here. Just to make you aware this is going on, there's a water trail sign plant in Story County. This is Skunk River, and these are all the crossings that are signed for canoe access. One of the changes, we've had these in place for a while, but the DNR is requesting we replace them all, one with the street name, and then they want the number of miles to the next access. And the DNR is paying for all the signs. We just have to install them for them. So that's a pretty good deal. And then some other signage that they require, these are already in place, but they have some updates that we're helping them bring all these signs up to date. These are directional signs that gets you to the canoe access. And again, they're paying for all the signs they want updated. But we're just installing them for them. And then Mike also has that program where he's going to put signs on all the highways for the drainage, where you cross into new drainage basin. So we're assisting him on getting those signs installed as well. Iowa DOT project updates. The flyover bridge is still being constructed. I think the piers are finally done, and they just need to get the superstructure on the top, and that's planned to be done by this fall. The DOT widening, this is still a long range. It's, I think, at least 4 or 5 years out, but they held a public meeting on it. This is Highway 210. The main thing is all the bridges that go over the interstate will need to be replaced at DOT's cost. And then we have the Heart of Iowa bike trail here. I believe that's a bridge now. I think they have a box culvert proposed to still get the bike path traffic through those new lanes and the existing ones. The bigger change comes a little bit further north here. Again, this is the Ames Water Treatment Plant in the road we were just talking about. This is our road up to this point, and then this is Ames private road through here. They have it in the planning study, so I need to find out if that road is being impacted, because it's going to be needed even more in the future. On that west side of the road, there is 2 homes that are being taken, one on the corner here and then one here, and we will actually lose a segment of road. We'll be vacated. We lose a big structure here. I think it's a triple box culvert, so we'll get that off of our inventory if this all goes through. I just wanted to make you aware of the impact through that area is probably the biggest. So the road will dead end here where now it curves around. It'll be dead ended here and just stop there.
They provide you with any timeline?
I haven't had much of a timeline yet. Like I said, I think it was at least 5 years out.
Right.
It could get accelerated. Now, we've already talked about the 580th interchange, so I won't go over that anymore. Already discussed 5-year construction program and DOT budget are due next week, so they're both approved, so we'll get those submitted. Pipeline project, the Bakken pipeline, just a quick update. Been waiting on all the work to be completed and all the tower repairs to be done before our consultant, ISG, turns all the data back over to us, and that's the way I want it to happen. I want them to take care of all the problems before they do that. It just keeps getting delayed. I don't know if they're finding more tile issues or what, but the pipeline keeps saying they're coming back to do a few more repairs, so they're just holding on to that data. Once that's completed, they're going to turn it over to us, and they have some software that's built in that we can check all the landowner agreements and everything and repairs that were made, and they're going to train us on that software. But I'll let you know when it gets turned over to the county, because then when we get complaints, those will come to me instead of the consultant. Yeah.
We had a high-pressure natural gas line go in here several years ago there on the east side of Ames and from the north, and there was a number of tile that was cross-cut. So if someone suspects that they've got a problem with the tile that's not working right, that they believe that was neither repaired or ineffectively repaired, who would they go to make complaint?
At this point, that would come to me. The majority of that pipeline is put in the existing road right away. So They didn't have to follow the processes that the larger pipeline did. So that would come to me.
Right.
A lot of those power issues were in an area of the city annex, out on 570th, but then there was probably some more on Lincoln Way that now the city of Ames is annexed.
Still, if there's a suspicion, I would refer them to you.
For now, yeah, I'm start with me. A lot of that's been annexed, so if I find it's been annexed, then I'll pass it on to the city. But
okay.
But start with me. That's fine.
All right. Thank you.
Class B road issues. Rick mentioned this a little bit earlier in the meeting. What we had was two. These are all of our level B roads, the purple ones there, 34 miles, I believe. This one had some mudders, say kids that go in there and see it's a nice muddy road to tear up. So they, and this extension from R70 where it tees, there's a level B road that continues down. The sheriff caught, in both cases, caught the individuals, which usually doesn't happen, but in this case they were able to catch them. This is the one down by Collins. It's hard to see the damage, but they were very aware that they were damaging the road while they were doing this. Picture back the other way. What that hurts is next time we get a rain, all that water just ponds and doesn't drain off, and it just takes forever for that road to dry out, so the farmers can't ever hardly use it anymore to get to their field. So that's the biggest damage. It doesn't cost us a lot to fix it, but it takes us forever to actually be able to get in to actually blade it to fix it because it stays wet so long. So the sheriff and the county attorney are working on maybe a fine they could apply to these. But that's still going through the attorney to figure out what direction to take on that. And this is the one south. And happened when I went out to look at it, there was a group of kids that jumped in their pickup and took off. So fortunately, it happens more than we like. But we're working on maybe making some examples out of them. So.
I can't think that it wouldn't help or wouldn't hurt. Yeah.
Federal aid swap, not much to update except all the processes are finalized now. It takes effect this fall, October of 2018. That's the federal fiscal year. We're waiting on some new project numbers before we could approve our program today that have swap numbers in them. So that's a little bit of the delay why we took so long to approve our program. But that's all been done. And the biggest, I guess, not really a downfall, but we were hoping to use that swap money on locally classified roads such as 560th south of Huxley, and has to be at least a farm market designated road to spend the swap money on, so it will make it a little more difficult to fund some of those local roads. A couple drainage district issues. There's two issues in this photo. One, we're working in the city of Fernald. This stretch at the south end of town where that large tree is and the roots. We're getting some estimates on what it would cost to replace the 100 to 200 feet of tile there with solid tile. When we get that estimate, I'll bring it to the board because with all the utilities in there, it could be a fairly high estimate, somewhere between $5,000 to $10,000, and that's only going to get spread through the residents in Fernald, so I don't know how well they're going to like that bill.
That's the one thing that they have been complaining about, though,
yes,
consistently, is that the water ponding, here's your solution. And I'm sorry that you're now in a new sub-district and the assessment would be yours, but we think we have the answer.
When I get the estimate over here at the board so we know exactly what we're dealing with and whether it's appropriate to move forward, or you want to have a public meeting, we'll decide that when we get an estimate.
Okay.
A little bit further south, that's the railroad crossing we're dealing with, and it took us 9 months just to get an answer, and the answer was no, we couldn't even jet across because the tree roots we thought were blocking it. Right about the time we got that answer from the railroad, we got the contact name of a new railroad manager, and that's usually who you want to get in contact with because they'll be a little more easy to deal with. He worked with us to at least jet it. While we were jetting it, this is a picture of that. This hole's been open for over a year to the jetting we were doing back here through the railroad. While we were jetting, we hit a blockage. We weren't getting any railroad ballast. When we get that, we know we got a major problem under the railroad because the railroad just fills the hole with railroad rock. We haven't got any of that through the tile yet, so we're hoping it's still just roots. So we had a contractor from McCallsburg televise it for us. Just a couple pictures. You can see these areas under the trees, and the roots start to come into the tile, and a little bit further down, the roots got so bad it actually started blocking the silt, and that's when we get the roll blockages. So they could not even get the camera through that. So we're going to try to one more time go back through with a bigger jet to blast it out, and then run the camera under the railroad to see if there's a bigger issue in the road. If so, we might have to bore a new tile, which gets fairly expensive. But
and still require permission from the railroad to do that?
Well, that's questionable. I found an attorney opinion from 3 years ago. He's an attorney for the Drainage District Association. Mm-hmm. He still claims we do not need permission to do this. I gave that to our county attorney for his review in case we get to the point where we got to bore a new tile. Because there's, just to start with, there's a $5,000 permit fee, and, mm-hmm. and it takes forever to get permission. So whether we even got to go through those steps, we'll find out. But that's why I want to tell everybody to make sure a new tile is even necessary. We soon keep this one working if possible. And then it also shows the cracks. It's fairly common in those old tiles that you can see the crack along the top. Mm-hmm. But as long as nothing's collapsed, they've probably been that way a long time. So we'll continue to work on that. If we get the jet through it, we'll probably tell by the under the tracks, which they couldn't quite reach with this one. But then the last thing on districts, we're dealing with some beaver dam issues in the district. This was one that is up on E18 pavement. The landowner was also concerned because they felt like it was backing water into their basement. So we decided to, we found a licensed contractor in Story City to go out and trap the beaver. And they were able to do that last week. And then we're able to get the dam out. And we kept tearing it out and it come right back. So we just spinning our wheels. That cost about $400. The landowner had some dogs in the area, so they couldn't use some of their normal trapping methods. So it might have been a little more costly, but we kind of wanted to get an idea of what it would cost to get a licensed person to come in and remove these as well. So this is our example, and so far they haven't come back, so I think it was successful. That's all I have. With just a quick comment on our new hires. We finally got our engineering technician position filled. It was open for quite a while because it's hard to find a qualified technician. Even the new grads all had jobs before they graduated, so we were able to find someone out of Marshalltown that had some experience, so that was great. His name is Stephen Brooks. Got our three summer positions filled already. It's mostly our mowing positions, summer positions. And then lastly, Dave Toot, our tile foreman, has a retirement reception on April 27th from 1:30 to 3. So he's been a great employee for us for about 20 years now. And if you got time, please show up.
Who's stepping up to replace Dave?
At this point, I can kind of give you an update on the process where it stands. We did open it up internally first, but we did put an experience requirement on it, a one-year tile experience. There was one individual that met that. We interviewed him, and he has since turned it down. So now we're to the point where we'll open that up to the public with that still experience requirement on it, see what kind of response we get from the public. If we don't get somebody with some good tile experience, we'll probably open it back up internally without the experience requirement, and we'll just work internally on that.
All right. Well, good luck there.
Yeah.
Well,
Thank you. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Darren. Very thorough. Well, since we have no other reports, that brings us to our public forum number two. Either Linda or Paula can step up and say something if they'd like. Not seeing anybody moving. Liaison assignments and committee meetings, for us.
A couple of us went to Collins last Thursday night. I'll let Marty talk about the significant thing that went on there at Collins that we were there to listen to. I attended the Juvenile Justice Committee meeting on Monday. I mentioned earlier that I'd been in a meeting where the Department of Human Services supervisor or the supervisors for our area for child abuse and ongoing services spoke. And one of the statistics she threw out is that 67% of the calls that are coming in right now to reporting complaints about alleged maybe child abuse, are neglect of
what they call, you know, the severe neglect of the services that they need to go ahead and live. And I asked her for a better breakout of those called on neglect that were related to food or housing, because those are two of the areas that we directly help fund asset services for. And so we'll be getting those. Statistics in the area, about 36% of the calls that come in are actually founded. So that means two out of three calls that come into the Department of Human Services, at least in this central Iowa region, are being not found and have any follow-up on, but they feel that part of the reason that the calls are up is due to the two, what she called the notorious cases about the two teens that died from two separate families. And so people are much more willing to call in now. So that was some takeaway from that. Heard a board met specially just yesterday down in Urbandale. We're going to look at pursuing formation of a 501c3 so we can get some funding grants that are not right now able to come to HERDA because it's a 2080 instead. So we'll stay as a 2080. I'll be bringing amended 2080 to you after the HERDA attorney generates one along with some new bylaws, and then they'll go, of course, to the attorneys, our attorneys here. This week I have Boost, I have SERPTA, also the joint meeting of both the technical and the policy committee, I think is on Monday, I'll be attending that. And last night I was in Slater, and I brought that up last because there were several topics that came up. One had to do with the fact there's been a lot of burglaries in Slater, down in Slater, Cambridge area. The deputy who was there, we had a pretty significant discussion because two of the city council members from Sheldon came up also, and it turns out that one of the people who's a suspect in all of these burglaries is also wanted for attempted murder for pulling a gun and shooting at somebody down in Sheldon. And so there was a discussion about what can local residents do. They think they're back in the area. He was sharing photos with the Sheldon and Slater City Council. So that was significant. We talked about their EMS services. They're down to three EMS technicians, either, you know, basic life support, or they've got a couple that are more trained, higher up on the certification. But that 3 months ago, they only had six, and so they're down three in just the last 3 months. They only have the three now, and so Huxley is taking Slater calls right now for EMT for the most part. And then finally, we discussed a little bit about the E911 going forward because their mayor sits on that commission. And finally, we had a request that I guess was sent to Darren Moon last week. Darren, I'll follow up with you afterwards. We just gave some more information about requests for a stop sign at a particular intersection. So that kind of takes care of my week past and upcoming.
On behalf of Nevada at large, the school in particular, thank you for the wisdom of making Kevin Cooper your Citizen of the Year last year. Coop is a force of nature. Four city council meetings, Colo, Roland, Collins, Ziering. Collins, it was a tortured path to success. They got there. It's something to experience. Local government has done in the different communities. In that sense, Ziering last night made the official announcement they had won a state grant of $100,000 for a bank restoration on their main street, which is a match, and you're likely to see movement on that starting next month. It's my 19th anniversary. I almost forgot when my wife asked. I know it's around tax time, so unfortunately I caught myself. We had a DCAP meeting, and I would like to thank Alyssa in her department because we had a wonderful training half day on Wednesday in recognition of chemical and alcohol as they present in the workforce. And I thought it was quite enlightening because it kind of took you past the suspicion to the actuals, and I see that with new eyes now. So it was a worthy endeavor, and I encourage you to get a chance to get yourself.
I actually did take it that afternoon.
No, you did.
Yeah, I was scheduled. So,
that's it. I have nothing further. I would take a motion to.
I move to adjourn.
I would second that. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, we're done. Thank you for coming today.
And happy anniversary.